study concentration.
Yes.
We help them by with the applicants.
Okay. So what is it?
Yeah, his parents are doing it.
His both of us have, you know. Right, well.
Because I have not experienced.
Right, yeah.
But I, from what I see, they're.
Yes.
Gosh.
Oh, that's so stable. Yes. Oh, God. That's great.
Yeah, yeah. What kind of area do you want to use again? That's what you want.
Yeah, I think it's not that you're too good. And support services, which would be academics. So, yes.
I'm wondering if I missed something in my package. Since you're always supposed to get Chevrolet's pendulum, is that later or?
Yeah, it'll be in class.
Okay.
You're very observant.
Okay, I took that way to get early. You said take one and pass it back, but they probably have that for.
What, get one? Yes, I guess.
If you take one, but she passes it back.
It's so profound. Wow.
Got it.
You're so literal. You just got so literal.
I just wanted to confuse there. So tell your mom.
I think one each. I can probably pass it around. Make sure you get the side people around. I'll give it to you first.
Oh, no, just because I have to leave my good sister is waiting for me.
Oh, yeah.
And she was in the time of lunch, too. Yeah. So she got the back chair.
Can you just take one and pass it around?
I wish she could pick you up. Yeah, she'll pick me up. And, just
huh? You need to email out the one Banyan Hypnosoftware Training Advantage. Needs to go out. And the certification course outline, schedule, and syllabus. These, couple things I gave out. One of them is a certification course outline syllabus. Not all that important. Just gives you a general idea of how we're going to go through the material. I have I claim the right to change that in any way at any moment if it appears it would help the class out. If you guys benefit, I might swap things around or whatever. Banyan Hypnosis Center for Training and Services, Inc. Advantage. It's one long bulleted list. It's just to make you feel good about choosing this class with all the stuff you get. I want to take your attention to the part where it goes free, 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 free down there, about halfway through. You didn't get one? Free online going telephone support. I just got off Telephone Lebanon. One of our grads called me about a session. If I can take the call, I'll take the call. If I can't, then Mark will take it. If it's a thing about the office, Maureen will take it. We're going to. Our most sacred motto here at our center is our success comes from your success. If you listen to people when they're talking about why they chose this, probably a third of the class is in here by referral because they said, if you're going to go get training, you should go see Cal. And so we realized that when we get done after these 10 days, it is not done. It is begun. Okay? That's not the ending. That's the beginning. Believe it or not, this is probably the honeymoon period, as terrible as it's going to be. Okay. We expect to support you by telephone, email, We also have an email group set up on Yahoo, which will all automatically be enrolled in, which is the free ongoing support online email group on Yahoo. We also just set up a new group on the OurHypnoSpace.com website to support you guys. Free repeat of this course to refresh and review. We usually have one or two people in the class are going through it for a second time. We do that because purely selfish. Our success comes from your success. And if you go through this class again, you're going to get everything at a deeper level. That's one reason why we do it. Another reason is, if you've actually gone out there and seen clients, and then you go through it again, you're going to ask questions that are different from the questions you would ask now. You're going to ask the what-if questions. And some of your questions, this is what an instructor is supposed to never do, you'll be downright silly. Because you don't have any experience to base them on. You're going to go, well, what if this happens? I'm thinking, gee, after 35,000 clients, that's never happened. Seems pretty remote. But it's something pop in your head and you ask a question. But if you've seen even 10 clients and you go through the class again, you're going to have questions that just make all the sense in the world. And so when you bring those questions into the class, you make it better for everybody instead of some of these kind of strange questions that we will get. You get a free page in our directory, hypnosis.directory.com. And when people call us and say, do you have a hypnotherapist in such and such area, we refer them to that directory. And it's all by state and country and that kind of thing. Also, there's something that's not free that is way, way, way too valuable for it to be free. But since it's so valuable, I'm going to tell you about it. If you look at some of our websites, hypnosiscenter.com, banninghypnosismall.com, calbanning.com, hypnosisdirectory.com, hypnosisinformationline.com, at least those websites, our most popular websites, on the left side you'll see some small ads about this big by this big that our graduates have placed on our website. It's $100 a month. But that's not all you get. You also get an entire page that's been optimized for the internet on hypnosiscenter.com, which is a very well-ranked website on the internet. So what happens is when people come to our site, they see you. If some people will be looking for a hypnotherapist in Tustin, but guess what? Most people come to our website and are looking for a hypnotherapist in Tustin. It's in their neighborhood they're looking for. And then they see your ad on the left. They click on that. It goes to your full, all practically unlimited in length page for you. And then also, if you have another website, you can link off of that page to your website. What that will mean is probably if you're not already listed in Google, within 3 days you'll be listed in Google. Plus, your ranking will probably go up. Because our website's been around on the internet since 1996. We're older than Google. And Google respects websites that have been around for a long time. So we rank well. They also know that if we link to someone else, then it's an important website. Because we don't link to garbage. And so your website will go up in rank for wherever you're at. And that has worked out really good for everyone that's done that. So you can consider that also if you want to get more clients. Okay, but you can look through that. If you have any questions, if I haven't covered it already, we're going to cover it in the next 2 weeks as we're together. And that's all the good stuff you're going to get. And you guys that are online, did you email that out to them? You're going to get in your email box. If you don't get in the email box within the next few minutes, then talk to John. And you folks who are CFIs, you've probably already got that. You went through that when you went through your 2 days of pre-class CFI training. Okay. Boy, I'm glad to have that over. Good. Now what we're going to do, ta-da. Remember I talked about all of our clients see a 20-minute pre-talk tape? This is the minimum amount of information that a client should have before you do hypnosis with them. Because fear inhibits hypnosis. And if they're fearful, or if they have misconceptions about hypnosis that would make them fearful, it greatly decreases the probability of you being successful and them being successful. So fear inhibits hypnosis. Remember that. So the purpose of a pre-talk is to remove fears and misperceptions or misconceptions about hypnosis. Fears are like, oh, if I, you know, I'll be unconscious and I won't remember what's happened. Misconceptions will be hypnosis is dangerous. See, these are all kinds of things that can cause problems. So we will do a little 20-minute pre-talk. The videotape in and of itself, or DVD, is not a complete pre-talk. It's about 90% of a pre-talk. Because there's 10% that's different for everybody. This is the major stuff that people are concerned about. When your client comes in to see you in your office or wherever after they see this, you'll say, do you have any questions about, you just watched a video about hypnosis. Do you have any questions about anything on the video or about hypnosis? And then as you answer those questions, then what do you do? That's how you finish up the pre-talk. After the pre-talk will come the pre-hypnosis interview. And you're going to learn to differentiate between those two. The pre-hypnosis interview is basically where you get their complaint and the history of the complaint. Okay, so we're going to watch this. This is a bare amount of information your clients need. You need more than that. So afterwards, well, a little question-answer period after this, so you can ask any questions about what's on the tape. Then I'm going to go beyond what's on the tape because you generally need to know more than your clients do about hypnosis. Okay? So now, if technology works as predicted, you should be able to watch out. Hello, I'm Cal Banyan. I'm a board-certified hypnotherapist and certified instructor. Today I'm going to spend a little bit of time with you explaining the fundamentals of hypnosis. Research has shown that if we take the time to explain a little bit about hypnosis to our clients, they benefit much greater from their hypnotic sessions. What I'm going to do is I'm going to explain some terms and remove some misconceptions that perhaps Hollywood has given you about hypnosis. What I'd like you to do is make sure you have a pen or pencil or a piece of paper with you right now. So if you have any questions about the material I'm covering, you can write it down and then talk it over with your hypnotist or hypnotherapist. All right. I'd like you to take your attention to this chart that I have here. What you're going to see is that I'm going to cover four components of the mind. The conscious mind, the critical factor, the subconscious mind, and the unconscious mind. Each one of those areas of the mind has certain characteristics that will be interesting for you to know. Then you're also going to cover that each level of the mind has a protective function. Even when you're in the deepest levels of hypnosis, you're always safe because the conscious, the subconscious, the unconscious mind are always working to make sure that you are safe. So let me go over this bit by bit. I'm going to start with the unconscious mind. The unconscious mind is really your body's consciousness. Medical people will call this the autonomic nervous system. When you're born, you come in with instincts. It's an inner knowing of how to operate your body. The unconscious mind is responsible for respiration, heartbeat, all the things you don't have to think about. Now, one of the things about the unconscious mind is its ability to change and learn is limited. It can change, it can learn, but in your daily kind of activities, it isn't very good at it. However, Dr. Ivan Pavlov showed that when we pair a stimuli with some other occurrence, that the unconscious mind can actually learn. For example, what he did is he showed that if he should gave a stimulus like a bell, gave a dog a morsel of food, and then the dog would salivate. And after pairing it a number of times, that just hearing the bell ring would cause the dog to salivate. And so that shows that the unconscious mind can learn, because salivation is not under the control of the conscious mind, it's under the control of the subconscious mind. The unconscious mind can learn through that kind of classical conditioning or through self-hypnosis, hypnosis, and hypnotherapy. For example, someone who's suffering from migraines, this is something that's happening at the unconscious level. Well, through hypnosis, we can re-educate the unconscious mind and have it rid itself of pain. Now, another interesting thing about the unconscious mind is that it is the part of you that generates how emotions feel. For example, if you feel happy, there's a certain physical sensation that goes with happiness or joy. If you're feeling sad or angry, your body feels a certain way. And because the unconscious mind generates the physical attributes of emotions, we call those things feelings. Now, one of the things I'll talk about right away is that even at the deepest level of your mind, the unconscious level, you have a protective function. No matter what you're doing, no matter what you're thinking, the unconscious mind is always protecting against infection and uses reflexes. For example, if a ball was heading towards your face, before you had time to think about it, you would automatically cover up like that. So the unconscious mind has a protective function. The subconscious mind is really who you really are. It is all of your habits, behaviors, beliefs, and it really is an exceptional part of you. Let me go through it step by step. The subconscious mind starts out empty when it is first developed. And then as you go through life and you have experiences, what happens is you start to build up a database. What happens is psychologists call the subconscious mind, when it's first developed, tabula rasa, which means blank slate. Then, as you have those experiences in life, they kind of coagulate into beliefs, habits, and once those have occurred, then they resist change. And you really develop a certain consistent way of behaving to certain circumstances and people, and your personality is developed. Once that happens, it resists change. This is good news and bad news. The good news is you will behave consistently, you'll have a particular personality. The bad news is when you want to make changes, it's very difficult to make changes unless you can have a protracted experience over time or unless hypnosis is used, because hypnosis can have immediate effect on the subconscious mind. The subconscious mind is also the area that generates the emotions. Based on your beliefs and experiences in the world, you respond to them in an emotional way. For example, if you believe a person should treat you in a particular way, and they treat you unfairly, the subconscious mind will begin to generate the feeling of anger. One of the interesting things about the subconscious mind is the subconscious mind seems to be unlimited in capacity. No one has ever filled it up. And unless
there is a trauma to the brain or disease, you can always learn something new. And the information in that database information is always accessible. Even people who are in their oldest years can tell you about their childhood. And in hypnosis, it is very easy to access that information. That's why it's sometimes used in court trials to uncover information about a crime. Now, the other interesting thing is that all levels of the mind have this protective function. The subconscious mind protects against known dangers and motivates you to fulfill your needs. So that's what the emotions do. They motivate you. If something is a known danger, it'll generate the emotion of fear, and that motivates you to take care of the situation, keep yourself safe. I'm going to skip over here just for a moment to the conscious mind. The conscious mind, there's this old saying, I think, therefore I am. But the truth is that who we really are is the subconscious mind. But the part of us that thinks is our point of focus, our conscious mind. This point of focus has a home place, and that's in the now. Right now, you're consciously focusing on this video. But we could talk about the past, and the conscious mind can then refocus in the past. We could talk about things in the future, like how you might use hypnosis to change your life in the future. And you'll start thinking about the future. But I want you to think about the conscious mind as primarily what you're focusing on right now. It is analytical and logical. It's kind of your problem-solving mechanism. It's your ability to assess a situation, use your experience to come up with an answer. For example, if you're working on a mathematical problem, you're using the conscious mind. One of the other interesting things about the conscious mind is that it is limited. The subconscious mind is unlimited, but the conscious mind, there's lots of scientific research, psychological research, that shows that the conscious mind can only hold about 7 to 9 bits of information at any time. This is why trying consciously to make important and substantial changes in your life usually fails, because the conscious mind can only hold 7 to 9 bits of information. Hypnosis allows you to go in and work with this greater database of who you are and have an effect on your habits and beliefs, especially those limiting beliefs that have held you back at times in your life. And as we can see, the conscious mind also has a protective function. It is constantly protecting you against perceived danger. And that's based upon what is rational and analytical. So that's basically how the hypnotist thinks about the conscious, subconscious, and unconscious mind. Now you're going to notice that between the conscious mind and the subconscious mind is a thing called the critical factor. The critical factor is a comparing mechanism. As new information comes into you through your senses, it has to be acknowledged by the conscious mind and then get through this critical factor before it becomes beliefs, habits, and really enters into that database of information. The critical factor is the reason why it is hard to change limiting beliefs and habits over time. When that new information comes in, it compares that new information with what's already in the subconscious mind. If it matches what's already in there, especially in the area of beliefs and habits, then it instantly goes in and then reinforces what already exists. Those beliefs, those habits become more firm, stronger in your life. But if some new bit of information comes in and it doesn't match what's in there, it just goes into the database of information. It's stuff you know about, but really doesn't have an effect on your life. Now I'm going to define some terms that your hypnotist may find him or herself using. First, the most important term is, what's hypnosis? Fortunately, the U.S. government has given us a definition that is very useful. According to the U.S. government, hypnosis is the bypass of the critical factor and acceptance of acceptable selective thinking. An example of that would simply be that when information comes in, hypnosis allows us to bypass this comparing mechanism so that information can go right into the subconscious mind and affect our limiting beliefs and our habits. So we can make powerful change right away. Now, if I was to change this around a little bit, maybe improve a little bit, I'd change the definition to, through the establishment of acceptable selective thinking, we would get the bypass of the critical factor. And the establishment of acceptable thinking is really just a fancy way of saying focused attention. When a hypnotist or a hypnotherapist works with you, when you first start off the session, he's going to be doing, or she's going to be doing, a hypnotic induction. And this just helps you to relax and focus your attention. Another word that your hypnotist might use, or hypnotherapist, is the word sleep. Hypnosis is not sleep. If your hypnotist or your hypnotherapist use the word sleep, I want you to think of it as a shorthand. Shorthand for go deeply relaxed as if you were asleep with your eyes closed. If you go to sleep, you'll miss the whole thing. So stay awake no matter how many times your hypnotist or hypnotherapist says sleep. Just remember that that means eyes closed, deeply relaxed. One of the important things I want to really mention as we're here today talking is I want you to understand that hypnosis is a normally occurring state in human beings. Hypnosis has been going on for so long as there's been human beings as we know them. Let me give you some examples of normally occurring states of hypnosis. Most people have had the experience of driving in a car or riding in an automobile and driving along. Maybe you're thinking about what you're going to do when you get to work or on the weekend, and you're thinking, well, your focused attention on something other than driving. Your unconscious mind is taking care of driving the car. You're going to go into a state of hypnosis because of the focused attention, and then all of a sudden you might go, oh, I wonder if I've passed my turnoff. Or, gee, where did the time go? These are common kinds of experiences when driving. These are naturally occurring states of hypnosis. Another interesting thing is, in very deep levels of hypnosis, people can experience analgesia or anesthesia. The analgesia is a blockage of pain, and anesthesia is a complete blockage of all sensation. I know I've had the experience, and maybe you have also, the experience of, oh, maybe you're getting ready for bed, and you look down at your leg or your arm, and you'll notice that there's a big bruise, or a cut, a scrape, or a scratch. And you wonder, gosh, how did I get that? Well, this is what happened. During the day, you were focused on something, and as you focused on it, you went into a state of hypnosis, naturally occurring, normal hypnosis, and then what happened is you incurred the injury, the bump that caused the bruise, the cut, the scrape that caused the cut, and you didn't even feel it. And so that shows that even hypnotic anesthesia and analgesia is a normal, naturally occurring state. Here's one of my favorite examples. In one of the deepest levels of hypnosis that the hypnotherapist uses, you can experience what's called negative hallucinations. Let me tell you a little bit about hallucinations. First, there's regular hallucinations, is where you see or hear or taste something that doesn't exist. Negative hallucinations is when you not hear or not see or not taste something that does exist. And one of my favorite examples of this negative hallucination is, oh, take a Sunday morning where I'm getting ready to do breakfast for the family. I'm going to make some scrambled eggs and some hash browns. And I look over at the table and I see that there's no ketchup on the table. So I go, no ketchup. And then I think, well, maybe it's in the refrigerator. I turn to the refrigerator, I look at the top shelf and I go, there's no ketchup. I look at the second shelf and sure enough, I see no ketchup. I say, there's no ketchup. And I continue going down the shelves, there's no ketchup, there's no ketchup. I really want to find this ketchup. I want to be focused. So I focus in the doorway. I say, no ketchup. I look, there's no ketchup, and there's no ketchup. And then I ask my wife, dear, do we have any ketchup? She goes, yes, we do. I go, is it in the pantry? It's not in the fridge. She says, oh, yeah, it's in the fridge last time I looked. I go, okay. And then I refocus my attention. I look at each compartment of the refrigerator going, no ketchup, no ketchup, no ketchup. I go all the way through all the shelves, and then my wife comes up. She's got her hand on her hip, because I've done this before, and she pulls out her magic finger, and she walks up to the refrigerator, and just as it gets just a few inches from that one shelf, and poof, the ketchup magically appears. and I feel a little bit embarrassed. Okay? How in the world did that happen? How did I look right at that ketchup bottle? It's right there in front and not see it. I actually hallucinated negatively, and that is to look right at it and not see it. And this is how that happened. Here I am, I'm relaxed, I'm focused, I look at the table and I say, there is no ketchup. And I continue to go through the refrigerator saying, there's no ketchup, there's no ketchup. By the time I actually lay eyes upon the ketchup, my subconscious mind has accepted the fact that there is no ketchup. And then when I look at it, I hallucinate it's not there. Now, for some people it's a bottle of ketchup, another person it might be their keys, it might be their purse, it could be their glasses, that kind of thing. So most of us can understand from those examples that we go into hypnosis thousands of times in our life. Okay. Another thing I want to get to you real quick, because we're wrapping this up, is that hypnosis is safe. When you go into hypnosis, you're always going to be conscious. You're never going to be unconscious. Whatever the hypnotist is having you focus on, well, that's a function of the conscious mind. Typically, a hypnotist will have you focus on relaxation. That's a very nice thing to focus on. Typically, you'll go more relaxed as you do the hypnosis session. And because all the levels of the mind, the conscious mind, the subconscious mind, all have these protective functions, no matter how deep you go into hypnosis, you're always going to be able to protect yourself. If ever a suggestion is given to you that you don't like, you'd automatically reject it. And if it was something you really didn't like, you might even emerge from hypnosis. Hypnosis is safe and been accepted by the American Medical Association since 1958, and has been used by medical and other kinds of professionals for a great variety of things, from anesthesia to behavioral change, taking care of psychosomatic illness, and a number of things. Hypnosis is a consensual state. It's something that you do with the hypnotherapist. As a matter of fact, the hypnotherapist really is acting as a coach or a guide. He or she knows a number of what we call hypnotic inductions. If you follow the instructions, you're going to be focused, relaxed, and go into a wonderful state of hypnosis. By the way, leave it up to your hypnotist or hypnotherapist to determine if you are in hypnosis. Anyone of normal intelligence can be hypnotized. It used to be thought that only 20% of the population could be hypnotized. Well, what we've learned is if we take the time to do what I'm doing here, explaining hypnosis to you, then anyone of normal intelligence who's willing to follow instructions can experience a wonderful level of hypnosis and experience all the changes that he or she came in to make. Now, let me wrap this up. In a few minutes, your hypnotist or hypnotherapist will come in. I hope you wrote down any questions you might have so that you can ask him or her about any questions you have about hypnosis. Feel free to ask those questions. We want you to be comfortable with the idea of going into hypnosis. Okay, once again, this is Calvin Banyan. Thanks for taking the time to learn a little bit about hypnosis with me today.
My mother loves that video. All right. Any questions or comments about that video?
When you are rejecting an idea because you don't think it's good for you under hypnosis, are you conscious that you're rejecting it, or are you just not going
to? As soon as you begin to feel uncomfortable with it, the comparing mechanism immediately rejects it.
Okay. Mm-hmm. So I would know that if I were rejecting something or...
Well, now that you know that any kind of anxiety or worry or discomfort with the suggestion automatically rejects it. If you didn't know that, it would still automatically reject it, but you didn't know you were rejecting it.
It says you can hypnotize anyone with normal intelligence. What about autism?
Normal intelligence?
Well, I believe she has normal intelligence. But because her brain's wired differently,
yeah. The definition is really normal intelligence is mentally healthy. Mm-hmm. If you have someone that's thought disordered or severely mood disordered, attention disordered, then they're going to have difficulties.
Down syndrome.
normal intelligence. I'm not aware of, I'm not an expert on Down syndrome, but I'm pretty sure that in every case Down syndrome, it's less than normal intelligence, right?
Celeste told me to be careful with this one, but I'll ask anyway. I see a lot of folks with non-meds. They could be for antidepression, they could be for sleep disorder, they could be for anxiety. And now what would, does that play? Is there some type of barrier there that may be persistent or that may be covering up? You know, attend, in other words, some people that are on tranquilizers can still feel agitation below, but still feel calm.
What is your question?
Does medicine inhibit, medication, prescription medication, inhibit the process of hypnosis?
If it interferes with their ability to concentrate or to respond in a normally intellectual manner or to follow instructions, yes. Because they're falling asleep or they're too groggy or whatever, but for no other reason. Kim, do you have a question?
No.
Anybody else? Okay. That's what your clients need to know. I'm going to take it a little bit further, and I'm going to try to write big so our web cameras can see what's going on. I'm not going to write and go into quite as much. I'm going to emphasize some different parts of that model of the mind, because I want you to really start thinking of like a 1%. Okay. Out here, in this area here, is everything that you can sense or perceive. Your world. Outside of you or inside of you. Certainly if you had a headache, that's inside of you and you could perceive that, right? All that kind of stuff. And so, all around this next box here, this part here, are the six senses. Six, six, six.
Whoa.
Six, six. Six. Name one of the six senses, Michael.
Oh, you caught me off guard. Okay, sight.
Good. Astra.
Touch.
Good.
Hearing.
Good. You guys need to wear your name tags. I'm going to look down. Good. Good. Touch, taste, sight, smell, hearing, and what? Hmm?
Feelings.
Nothing more than.
See.
No, I think that emotions are a sense. Yeah, I think feelings. Or, there's also a thing called a kinesthetic sense. Like, close your eyes right now, just for a second or two. Where's your right hand? You know where your right hand is. It's a kinesthetic sense. Okay, open your eyes. Okay. So it's like you know where your body position is. I can tell where things are at usually. Not always. Getting some altered state of consciousness, I might not know. Okay. My point is not that there's six senses or seven senses, but there is everything that we can sense and everything that we can sense with. There's the sensible and the sensing part of us, right? Okay. And then I have conscious mind, subconscious mind, and unconscious mind. We already covered a lot of this. I'm going to try to emphasize and add now. This is, remember, logical analytical, and 7 to 9 bits of information. It is your focus. What you're thinking about right now. You could be thinking about right now what's going on now, or you could be thinking about right now what happened in the past. You could be thinking about right now something you're going to do 2 weeks from now. But it's all about that little part of your brain that appears to be part of the frontal lobe that's focusing on what you're thinking about now. Then over here, we have the unconscious mind. Your unconscious mind is not unconscious. You're just not conscious of its consciousness. Did you get that?
Yep.
I said that very slowly, because someone's translating that to Japanese in their mind. Would you like me to repeat that? Your unconscious mind is not unconscious. And here, we're using the word conscious as like aware, thinking, knowing. So the unconscious mind is not unaware. We are just unaware of what it's aware of. Because we're conscious mind focused. We're aware of what we're thinking about. Now the unconscious mind is very busy thinking about what it thinks about. And basically, it is your body consciousness. Autonomic nervous system, reflexes, perspiration, respiration, ejaculation, all those Asian words. Not Asian words, Asian words. So, it's all automatic stuff. And thank goodness for that. Automatic. Because if you had to regulate your breathing consciously, you go out of your freaking mind. Like, up until this moment, you probably weren't even thinking about your breathing. About how fast you're breathing, or how deeply you're breathing, or how long you should hold in each breath. But you are now. In fact, you'd kind of like to stop thinking about your breathing because it messes everything up. You know, right now, if you put all of your mental effort into breathing properly, 100% of your conscious effort into it, you're no way going to do it as well as the unconscious mind does automatically. Because it's got input that we don't have. Like, it knows like how much oxygen content is in there, how much the body demands of it at any particular time, hormones and chemicals and all of this stuff. So, that's what's going on there. Now, here's where it gets interesting. Now, I've seen other models of the mind that are adequate for working with clients. Like Jerry Kine's got a great model of the mind for working with clients. I'm just going to draw a little mini model here. It looks like that. And outside is conscious mind, the middle is subconscious mind, and the inside is unconscious mind. It drives me nuts. It's perfect for the client, but as a hypnotherapist, it drives me nuts. Jerry designed this for clients, so it's perfect for what it was designed for. But I'm a slave to logic. It must make as much logical sense as possible to me. Perfect for clients. That's what it was designed for. But the subconscious mind is the largest part of you. In this model, the conscious mind is the largest part of you. That doesn't work for me. In this model, the critical factor is placed here in the conscious mind. I don't agree with that, and I'm going to show you why. And this whole idea of the critical factor rejecting information is not totally true either. For example, if you believe the UFOs are coming to this planet and have been coming to this planet, will probably continue coming to this planet, raise your hand. If you think that's a bunch of hogwash, raise your hand. You guys are chicken because you won't vote either way. We're going to try again. If you think that aliens are coming to our planet, raise your hand. If you don't think so, raise your hand. Okay. But guess what? You guys that don't believe that know that people believe that, right? You don't just totally reject the idea and not know about UFOs, right? So how do we, some of you guys believe in God. Some of you don't believe in God. But you know about what the concept of God is. So the idea didn't get rejected. It's still in there in the subconscious mind and long-term memory. So where did it go? Okay. This is the important thing here. Data. We know about stuff that we don't believe in. It's just data. Okay. Well, some of you believe in the devil. Some of you don't. Some of you believe in the Easter Bunny. Some of you don't. So what happens is there is this threshold. And that is the threshold of suggestibility for the subconscious mind. Okay? You can know that someone gave you a suggestion, but it doesn't work. You'll remember that they gave you a suggestion that didn't work if it doesn't cross that threshold. So here, what's in here? Beliefs, habits, and emotions. You must get past this threshold of suggestibility, which is also called the critical factor. Here's another interesting thing. The unconscious mind also has a threshold of suggestibility, but just to be kind of graphical here, it's much lower than the subconscious threshold of suggestibility. That's why placebo works. Placebo. That's when someone gives you like a pill and they inform you with authority that it's going to have a certain effect on you, even though there's nothing in the pill that would cause that to occur medically or physiologically. You give the child a sleeping pill made out of sugar and you say, this will put you to sleep. Clonk. You give the 50-year-old man, a pill made out of sugars, this will put you to sleep. Clon. Okay. And it's because the unconscious level of the mind is very suggestible. It has a low threshold of suggestibility. Now, as we get to know each other a little bit more, you're going to find out I'm a rascally guy. Rascally. He's like Dickens. That means like, my wife says I'm a stirrer. You know, like to stir it up. So I'm growing up in L.A. city school system. I'm in elementary school. And being the rascally little guy that I was, just curtain climbing, crumb snatching lawn monster about that big. Perfectly beautiful day. I'm on the schoolyard and I go, man, isn't the smog terrible today? My eyes have been stinging since lunchtime. Pretty soon I got everybody at the table just bawling, tears going down. Why is that? Because the body is very suggestible. You just are. Anyone ever watch House? I love House. He's got quite the attitude for a physician. He has this episode where this one guy on an airplane gets sick. And just about everybody's ready to keel over and die because they think it's contagious. They're throwing up. They're getting rashes, all this stuff. Hands twitching like this. Totally hysterical. That's all based on medical fact. Okay? So our subconscious minds, I mean unconscious minds, are very suggestible. Now, our conscious mind has a very high threshold of suggestibility. This is interesting because what happens is we can be hypnotized at a fairly deep level and not realize it. Okay? Because we haven't reached whatever level of suggestibility is required for our conscious mind to feel hypnotized. Okay? This happens all the time. Once you get into the business, you start hypnotizing people who go, I didn't feel hypnotized. That's why we will use convincers. We want to convince them that they're hypnotized. Even though they accepted suggestions, they did this, this, and this, just like they were supposed to. If you don't convince them, they won't believe it. Okay. So it's interesting. It seems like, just on average, these numbers are a bit contrived and not perfect. But 0 hypnosis is sufficient to begin to have an effect on the unconscious mind. Remember, you give someone a pill, and you say, this is going to make your headache go away. What level of hypnosis are they in? None. I'm at school, little curtain climbing, chrome snatching lawn monster, going, oh, my eyes are burning. What level of hypnosis are my friends in? None. In normal waking consciousness, we are suggestible. We're suggestible.
Huh? Advertising lives on it.
That's right. So there is a such thing as normal waking suggestibility, which is 0 hypnosis. But it is normal waking consciousness. Did I go off the edge of the board there for them?
No, I'm
just terrified. Okay. So that's interesting. So in this level, 0 to about 3. Is sufficient to start getting some effect at the unconscious level. But to get an effect at the subconscious level, with reliability, with post-hypnotic suggestion, most of our clients come to us so that they don't smoke after they leave the office. Post-hypnotically. They don't want to just eat good while they're in your office in hypnosis. They want to eat well and exercise after the office to get a reliable, long-term effect at the habits level. You need level 4. I'm just going to put an arrow here. Level 4. That's the holy grail of hypnosis as far as I'm concerned. You need to have a way that you can reliably induce a minimum of level 4 to be really good at this business. Because most of what our clients come in for are these things. Dealing with beliefs like confidence. Okay? I know, part of me thinks I could go to college, but part of me believes I can. Part of me thinks I can be a good mother, part of me thinks I can't, and so on. Okay? Habits, eating too much, drinking too much, smoking too much, whatever it is, and emotions, like fears, phobias, things like that. This is what most of our people we work with. Okay. So we need level 4. I want you to remember that. Level 4, that's our target right there. Level 4. Now, level 5... better, but not required.
That's for the conscious mind to get in?
Even the conscious mind will believe that it's hypnotized if you get to 5 and 6.
Actually, it should be 5 and 6.
So I've introduced the Harry Aaron scale of hypnotism and that is 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6 levels. We're going to get into more detail, but just I want to have something to start to talk about. 1 is hypnoidal, 2 is light, 3 is medium, 4 is what we're going to call the threshold of somnambulism, 5 full somnambulism, and then 6 is profound somnambulism. But to be really good at this, we need number 4 minimum. It's because once we get number 4, we can do all these powerful techniques like age regression, parts therapy, the Gestalt style forgiveness therapy that we're going to be talking about. We need this, number 4. That's my target. So I need to have an induction that will reliably get someone to level 4. And that's what you have. The Elma Band is designed to give everybody, they follow instructions. If I've done a good job of removing fears and misperceptions about hypnosis, reliably, thousands and thousands of times, tested, proved, okay, level 4. So that's what we're going to do there. Now here's another thing that's really important. Any questions about that? Okay. Here's something that's also very important. Emotions. 5-PATH used to stand for 5-Phase Abreactive Therapeutic Hypnosis. Well, abreactive and therapeutic are words of contention in different states and localities, so we've renamed it to 5-Phased Advanced Transformational Hypnosis. But it is an emotionally based process. It's work that's done with feelings, anger, sadness, loneliness. So I want you to begin to start thinking about feelings. We're going to get into this you're going to understand the feelings to a level and degree of depth that most people never get. Emotions occur as we apply meaning to perception. We have these, here's our senses, right? You got your eyeball, you got your ear, and so on. All sensing. Now you notice one thing I did about this model is the problem with a model like this is you have the sensing out here, and so it's only in contact with the conscious mind, which is the outer ring. But in my model, what we do is say, yes, the conscious mind has access to sensing data input. The subconscious mind has access to the senses, and the unconscious mind has access to the senses all the time. That's one of the reasons why it's different. Now, what happens is you perceive something, okay, cause you to think and analyze and stuff like that. You think something. Then after you think something, it will interact with data, beliefs, and habits. And as a result, you will experience an emotion. Basically, in most general terms, the emotion either feels good or it feels unpleasant. Okay? Either feels pleasant or unpleasant. And that's based on the interaction of your perceptions with all this other stuff. If you perceive that something bad's about to happen, then you will experience fear. If you perceive that your lover is going to leave you forever, you experience sadness and then loneliness. You see? Now, but it's an interesting thing. Even though your subconscious mind generates emotions, it's got no feelings. Isn't that weird? I mean, think about it. It seems like the subconscious mind is in your brain. What happens if you stick a needle in the brain? Do you go, ouch?
No.
No. Your brain is incapable of feeling. All it can do is send electronic signals or hormonal signals or catalytic, you know, catalyst type signals, chemicals, either chemicals or electricity, that's all it can do. So your brain is an unfeeling organ. where do we feel our feelings? Everywhere else in our body. You go, that guy's a pain in the neck. She's a pain in the ass. This job's a pain in my back. And I feel like I got the weight of the world on my shoulders. Well, I had a gut reaction to that. I feel like my heart is breaking. You see, we feel our emotions in our bodies. And so those are generated by our body consciousness, our unconscious mind. So we have feelings. Okay. So, perception's what you're thinking leads to an emotion, but we don't feel it. If it wasn't for feelings, we wouldn't know how we were responding emotionally to anything. And then we have our feelings. This is God or nature's, whatever you want to call it, biofeedback system. Okay? Perceptions lead to emotions. Emotions lead to feelings. The feelings are either pleasant or unpleasant. If they're pleasant, they are rewarding, which means they reinforce whatever we have been doing that made us feel good and increases the probability that we'll do it again. If we feel bad, then painful feelings are useful. They're there to motivate us to do the sometimes difficult things we need to do to satisfy our needs, wants, and desires. Deep.
Well, and can't that become a habit? How sure can. Okay.
You ever heard of cocaine addiction? You ever heard of chocolate addiction? Wow, I feel good, right?
Okay.
When God or nature was designing our bodies, it was considering the last, you know, billion years, not the last 100 years, to serve us over that time. And so we are vulnerable to making ourselves feel good through ways that don't serve us in the long run. Cocaine addiction, morphine addiction, porn addiction, shopping addiction. Everybody knows when the going gets tough, the tough go.
Shopping.
There you go. Make ourselves feel better. Okay. So, that's what I'm talking about. I want you to start thinking about the mind in these ways. This is the basis. Perception, what are you thinking? What are you feeling? This part of us doesn't know. Our body does. Well, you'll see me over and over as I work with clients say, where do you feel that in your body? Okay? And it is either going to be pleasurable or it's going to be unpleasurable. It is either going to be new or it's going to be familiar. Those are the matrix that we'll be working with all the time. That is how this hypnotist looks at the mind. Any questions about that?
In a session, is there any point in addressing the term subconscious or unconscious? Are they in a session? Are they interchangeable when you talk to a client? After induction.
After induction?
Yeah.
I can't think of when I would do that. I might say, and now this is being accepted by the subconscious mind. But one of the things is I show all of my clients and all the clients that come here our pre-talk. And so I've said, this is the conscious mind, this is the subconscious mind, this is the unconscious mind. So once I've established those terms, and I want to stay consistent with those terms. If I'm doing something in hypnosis with someone, and I'm going to suggest something like, now this is being solidly accepted by the subconscious mind, I would use the appropriate term.
And then the second question. I had a client fall asleep, not smoking, for a week, felt great, and then he became super dizzy because he was, one, he has like 30 cups of coffee a day. But he was snoring, and I couldn't. I pulled the chair up, and he pushed the chair back. That's how far asleep he was. I mean, he was asleep.
And the question for me is,
does that just hit his unconscious mind and kind of miss to where he's having the unconscious reaction, and the habits are still? Because he was gone. I mean, he was.
Can you reframe your question? I'm kind of confused.
Somebody fell asleep in the session.
Right.
Was I addressing, because all I ended up start doing...
As soon as they're asleep, they're not in hypnosis anymore.
Okay, they're not in hypnosis. But something got in there enough that he stopped.
Placebo.
Yeah.
He expected the suggestion, the hypnosis session, to have some results. It had some results. The problem with placebo is it tends to wear off.
Okay.
Because it's just waking suggestion.
Okay.
The other part of the story that you talked about that you didn't ask me about was his bitchiness,
yeah,
as you put it, I think.
Yeah.
And the thing is, what's happening is he is, and we get into this much more when we start to understand the secret language of feeling, is that people use distractors as a way of managing emotion.
Yeah.
Feel bad, smoke. Feel bad, drink. Feel bad, eat. Feel bad, go shopping. Feel bad, masturbate. Feel bad, and it just goes on and on with ways of taking our mind off of what bothers us. You see?
Yeah.
And you took away one of his coping mechanisms. That's why people tend to gain weight when they quit smoking. So they'll exchange one coping mechanism or distraction for another. That's why if you go to an AA meeting where people stop drinking, you need a gas mask because of all the cigarettes.
Yeah.
Or a Coke in one hand or Mountain Dew. And a, okay. Also, I believe, I've never heard this from a medical source, but I believe nicotine is an emotional deadener. It'll work somewhat like, what's the medication they give for ADD? Ritalin. Ritalin and nicotine are similar chemical compounds, and they dampen emotion. So you take it away, then the emotion inside they've been managing through the use of the nicotine and other chemicals, they don't have anywhere to go, and so they come out. That's why for people like that, we do a therapeutic process. We go in and we neutralize those emotions. Okay, anybody else? Questions or comments about that? Very important. This gets into your head.
Yes.
Can
you have an emotion without having a feeling?
Okay, yes. Yes, next question.
How? Yeah, okay.
Yeah, well, because people, what they do is they start to feel the emotion, they experience, they have the emotion, but rather than allow themselves to feel, they distract. They head it off by the person who over-intellectualizes things is a perfect example of that. Anyone ever heard of the, it's an obscure television program called Star Trek?
Yeah.
And the guys have the pony ears?
Yeah.
Are they emotional?
It's illogical.
Yes.
They almost destroyed themselves because of their emotions. Yeah. They are far more emotional than human beings.
Yeah.
But what they've done is religiously turned to techniques that disallow them to feel it. See, they block it down. And, you know, that's what people do when they begin to get upset about something or they get in a situation where they figure they would get upset and instead they will get into some kind of distracting behavior. Biting their nails. You know, counting numbers. All obsessions, compulsions, all these things are ways of disassociating from the emotion before it comes up into feeling. Yeah. Anybody else?
And you're saying that then thinking can do, does that as well, right? Saying that thinking, thinking, thinking.
Yes.
Can be a distractor.
Can be a distractor.
Sure. People who, they'll say, like people will handle stress by counting or adding numbers and doing that kind of stuff. That is, instead of feel bad, distract. Okay. Huh?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. When you say something, someone will start to feel headed off in an intellectual area.
Mm-hmm. Start talking about being logical as opposed to, you know, compare men to women. In this area, women tend culturally and biologically to feel more comfortable in the emotional part of themselves. Men tend to not to. And so men will defend from experiencing their emotions by over-intellectualizing. So that's one way that we do that, is we'll escape from the feeling part into the intellectual part. That may be useful sometimes, and I'll talk about when that's useful, but doing that all the time, if we spend our time distracting from our feelings, we are doing two things that are very harmful to ourselves. One, we're coming out of touch with a very important part of us that's meant to motivate us to do things that we need to do to get our needs, wants, and desires met. Also, our emotional feelings are a form of intelligence that if we cut ourselves off from and we start living the intellectual-only life, it's like walking around trying to handle life with one half of our brain tied behind our backs. We're totally ignorant to valuable input. Okay, and we're going to get into this stuff so much more deeply, but I want you to have this kind of fundamentally planted here. Is there any part of this that you don't understand or you want some clarity on? Yes?
I'm suddenly confused about emotions and feelings and the difference.
Okay. One, two, one. Thank you. Okay. And what you're thinking is done in the conscious mind. That's your thinker. And two is emotion. Based on everything you know, data, and your beliefs and habits, you are either going to feel comfortable or not comfortable with what you're thinking about. Okay? That's called an emotion. If you're comfortable with it, it's pleasurable. If you're uncomfortable with it, it's not pleasurable, right? But our brain is incapable of feeling. And so it sends electronic and chemical signals through our body, and then we feel those emotions in our body, and that's why we call emotions feelings. However, generally we will use them interchangeably. But that's technically what I think is going on.
Could there be a possibility, I'm just asking now, that because of the wrong type of thing and the emotion that's being generated, neurotransmitters are out of balance? There either is too much of an inhibitor or too much of a non-inhibitor being released, dopamine, serotonin?
I suppose anything's possible.
But that would result into a lot of our new sicknesses that we see coming up today?
Possible. Not my area. For example, there's a lot of information about there that alcoholism is genetic. Maybe. That schizophrenia is a physical disorder. Maybe. That bipolar or depression is physical. Maybe, but so far as I know, they haven't isolated a bipolar gene. There's just no physical evidence of it. So we've got to work at a functional level as opposed to an anatomical level. And what we find out is if someone, and certainly there's things in the environment that could throw our chemical out of balance. That's just not my area.
What I mean by that, I guess I should maybe zero in, is that fibromyalgia tends to be this new, we don't know what the cause of it is, but it tends to be more a woman-type disease, 98%. And we just mentioned, and I concur, that women tend to be handle emotions differently than men. Could then that be maybe the mechanism that's causing this?
Has medicine, as far as you know, come up with a reason and a cause for fibromyalgia?
Unknown.
That's right.
They
don't
come up with a cause or a reason for
this. I believe that every time that I've worked with fibromyalgia or worked with a client who had fibromyalgia, they have either gotten partial or complete relief from it through hypnosis only.
Very good.
7-PAP is an excellent example of that. People start doing 7-PAP. And fibromyalgia going away. Now, it's anecdotal, you know, it's not empirical, but it's heuristic, right? It indicates further study is necessary.
Okay. Well, cellular biology is showing now, Dr. Bruce Lipton says 95% of your DNA can be changed. So what are you going to use to change it? I believe you can use your beliefs and all that stuff to change it. That's my belief.
Mm-hmm.
Science is showing it can be done.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
It's kind of like, you know, you're employing the absolute best pharmacy on the planet. It's already in your body. You know, right, that it's somewhat functioning somewhat normally. It's just, are you getting the message to the pharmacist?
Yep. Good. All right. So that's done. I want to talk a little bit about this interesting thing. All of the information, this is basically also called long-term memory, LTM. Everything that you've ever experienced in your life of any significance, and especially if there's any emotional component at all, is stored in the subconscious mind. Akiko, you look confused. Do you need me to repeat some part?
I understand.
Okay. I'm afraid you're going to say, just last hour. Thank you. All right. Imagine if you walked in after lunch and you saw that. Oh, this is over my head. Because that looks really complicated. But you know what? If we take it step by step, piece by piece, even something that looks like that kind of complicated is pretty easy to understand. Okay. So, we're going to do, I want you to have a little experiential experience. Well, I'm experiential experience.
I like it. Let's do it.
In a moment, I'm going to have you all close your eyes. It's just going to be like about 10 seconds, okay? Okay, and then just follow my instructions. We're not going to do any hypnosis or anything like that, honest. Okay, close your eyes. I'd like you to now think about or imagine a perfectly formed leaf, a green leaf, green like springtime, with a single drop of moisture upon it, like a warm and gentle rain that passed by. And when you've done that, open your eyes. Take as long as you want. John, take as long as you want. Oh. You're enjoying that, huh? Exercise over. Okay. Now imagine for a moment that each one of you had a little television screen and I could see what you were thinking. Imagine how embarrassing that would be sometimes. Okay. But during that exercise, you'd all have perhaps a leaf. So what I'd like to do now is talk about your leaves that you or about the experience that you just had. Okay? Sue.
Mine was a maple leaf. It had that little drop of dew on it.
You do say.
Okay. And it's because I like the Canadian flag, and I've always liked maples. Had a maple in our yard when I was a kid.
Syrup?
Yes.
Good, good, good. Somebody over here, tell me about your leaf. Yes, Astra.
Well, when you first said leaf, I imagined I do have a maple leaf hanging from my rear view mirror. It's covered in copper and it's see-through, but it's a real leaf. And then he said a green leaf, so I switched it to green. And then he said a drop of dew, and so I tilted it upwards and had a little drop of dew hanging off of it.
Perfect. Good. Good. Thank you.
I imagined a perfectly beautiful green leaf. I could see it very clearly. Then my conscious mind got in the way and said, well, I don't know what kind of leaf that is. I don't know where we're
going to
go with this. So then I changed
it
to a mango leaf, and I had no problem
with that. Yeah. How many of you guys know what a mango leaf looks like?
Yeah.
Describe a mango leaf.
It's not their own. They're elongated. They have a spine, and they're green. I'd say they're typically medium green, even maybe almost chartreuse green to dark green. They will come like that.
Ah.
So they're pointing at the end, and a lot of times they'll bend
Where are you from? Hawaii or something? Oh, okay. Thanks. Who else? I need at least one or two more leaves here. Yes.
Started out as a fall maple leaf, changed it to green, totally different leaf, and then dew leaf with like a photograph.
You did the dew, huh?
Yeah, the dew changed for different pictures. And it was maple too.
Great.
All three.
Maple 3, banana leaf 0. Okay. Dee, did you get a leaf?
Yeah. My ficus tree.
A what?
Ficus.
What'd you call me?
Ficus.
There she goes again.
It's a small leaf. And I saw the dew, and then when you start talking about the warm rain, it's like, all right, I'm just melting in a chair.
Beautiful. I need somebody else that had maybe a little different experience. Anyone have any different experience? Michael?
I'm not sure, but I think it's a mint leaf. Mm-hmm. It has little jagged edges on it. And it was somewhat transparent, hard to focus on. But it turned a little bit, and it was a problem.
Beautiful. Thank you. John?
Like I tried to construct the leaf with my mind, and then as a relaxed one disappeared, that was different.
Good. Some people are very good visualizers, and some are not. And I was looking for someone that maybe had a little trouble with that exercise. As a hypnotist, I word my statements very carefully. I said, think about or imagine. Okay. So people who are non-visual or have trouble with visualization can still think about and not have the burden of trying to hold a mental image in their head. So that's one of the things. If you hear me say, think about or pretend, it does not require that you visualize. Because somewhere between 20 and 50% of the population really have a hard time holding on to an image for a few seconds in their mind. It's normal. Unless we get them into somnambulism. Once they're in somnambulism, everybody's visual, everybody can experience these things, but they're not visualizations anymore. They are hallucinations, because at that level of suggestibility, you can hallucinate. Okay, which also tends to increase your ability to visualize later on. Okay, now, what's interesting is you notice that all of your reports came from your past. You see, just by having you follow that very simple suggestion, I'd like you to think about or imagine a perfect form leaf from the tree, green like springtime with a single drop of moisture upon it like a warm and gentle rain to pass by. Just by listening to that, willing to do it, we went into rapport with the subconscious mind and was able to get data out of it. That's why a lot of hypnotic techniques rely on some kind of visualization or thinking about it, something, and because what's it do? It puts you in rapport with the subconscious mind, and so we can begin to work on, once we've accessed the data, then we can begin to work on that threshold of suggestibility. Okay, let's do another experience. Kind of a Jimi Hendrix thing. Are you experienced? Okay. Nobody's getting that but me. Okay. Now, you have to be like 50 plus to get that. So you guys are all too young. Of course, he's dead.
Janis Joplin. Mercedes-Benz.
That's a case of loose association right there. Okay. Okay. What I'd like you to do is to stand up, because we're going to do another experiential kind of thing. I save this stuff for the afternoon after lunch, because it's good to stand up once in a while. So if you don't mind, no hurry. And then, you know, once you've done that, just what I'd like you to do is, we're going to use imagination again. But this time I'd like you to get into an even more imagining kind of situation in your mind. Think about when you were a little kid, little curtain climbing, crumb snatching law monster, about 5, 6, 7 years old. Remember how good you were at imagining stuff? Kind of think like that just for a minute or two. Get in that imagining kind of mode. Now what I'd like you all to do is put your hands straight out in front of you like this. Now I want you to stick your right thumb up. And just leave your left hand with your fingers down and your hand closed. Good. Now close your eyes. And get into that 5 to 7 year old mind that you once had so long ago. And I'd like you to think about or imagine what it would be like to be that 7 or 5 year old boy or girl, and you, around your right thumb you got a string, and the string goes up to a big, huge, giant red balloon. Imagine how happy you are. And that big red giant balloon is full of helium, and it's bouncing up, 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 and it's tugging on your thumb and tugging on your thumb, and it just makes you feel so good you could smile. Now on your left hand, you got a yellow bucket. And now your attention goes to the yellow bucket. It's empty. But I'm walking around, and I'm plopping stones the size of golf balls and baseballs in there. Plop, plop, plop. Yeah, in that yellow bucket. Plop, plop, plop. And you think about how heavy that's getting. Oh, you don't want to think about that. So you take your attention back to that big red balloon, bouncing up and down, making you so happy, bouncing up and up and up. And it feels so good to think about the red balloon tugging up, 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 so light. And now your attention goes back to your left hand and your left shoulder. Oh, your left shoulder is starting to get tired of holding that heavy yellow bucket. And I go around, plop, 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 more rocks, baseball size, golf ball, plop, plop, plop. Good. And now I want you to open your eyes and look at your hands and then look around at everybody's hands. Good. And now put them down and you'll feel so much better. Then sit down, we'll talk about it. Will you guys all have your name tags on every day? Because it helps me out a lot, and it helps the group out a lot, too. Did you lose your name tags already? Okay, Sib's got it.
I lost it. I didn't take it off. I left it on.
Oh, it must have just got snagged on something. We'll make you another one. Because it really helps to have everybody have a name tag. You ever go to like the store and there's somebody you knew from high school? You can't remember their name, so you don't talk to them.
They take Marie with
me. Yeah, she's not always with me. She's not here. I wouldn't need name tag. Yeah. So, please, every day wear your name tags. Okay. So let's talk about that experience a little bit. Sid, what was that experience like for you?
It was an automatic movement because it was really jerky. Mm-hmm. And, very small. But while the movement down, I noticed much more. As soon as it would plop, 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 mm-hmm. I could feel it. And the rising was a little bit not as responding as much.
Uh-huh.
But, I wasn't trying to stop it or not stop it.
Just letting it happen.
Yeah,
you have to want to have the experience. It's very easy to say, like, if you don't feel comfortable with this experience, like if you thought, oh, I'm going to feel foolish if my hands moved, then they're not going to move. You have to want to have the experience. It's something we do together. Good. Thank you. Who else would like to share from that experience?
I was really stressed because I thought, oh, I don't know if we're supposed to do this. So I thought about it the whole time. Maybe the trick is to see if you can keep them even. No, I can't decide what the trick is. So I spent my whole time stewing about that. And I wanted to peek and see what everyone else
was. So that's great because whatever we have happen is useful. And I'm looking for those kind of experiences. I'm looking for everything. So there was a part of you that wasn't comfortable with what we were doing. So that inhibits the effect. I was not clear enough for you to feel comfortable. If we did it again, you would probably feel more comfortable with it.
Right.
Yeah. And that's one thing we know about hypnosis. If we hypnotize someone and then emerge them, talk about the experience, and hypnotize them again, they tend to go deeper the second time. That's because they're more comfortable with them. Did you steal his name tag?
No, we got another one.
Oh, wow.
That is the tape of them, so I can't fall off.
All right, Mitch. See now? Not so much friendlier. Isn't that great, Mitch? See, I couldn't do that before. Good. Kim.
I had experience of that, you know, first of all, I go, man, I've had way too much caffeine, and I got to go. And when you start putting that sand bucket in there, this one started to go up. I could feel it going up, this one going down. It's the mind shot. Oh, this is great. And I was laughing all the time because it kept happening. I'm going, I know what's happening. I can see it happen. It's happening.
Mm-hmm. And so you're beneficial to allow the phenomenon to occur. If you don't, you kind of miss out. You guys are going to be hypnotizing each other, and you can inhibit what happens, or you can want it to happen. Okay, and that's the most important thing. You don't have to understand it. You just have to focus on what's being said, follow the instructions, and be comfortable with it. If you're not following instructions, it won't work. If you're not concentrating, you know, staying with what's going on, it won't work. And if you're fearful, it won't work. Anybody else have an experience they'd like to share about that?
That was fun. I was really my five-year-old at that moment. And I was looking up at the sky at this huge balloon, and I was seeing this blue sky and these huge puffy clouds. And then when I was doing the bucket, I was thinking, this is really heavy for a little guy to have to hold. And I was
at the beach. Keeps putting rocks in his bucket.
I was like at the beach. So I was like Disneyland, and I was like at the beach at the same time. It was great. It was fun. It was uplifting.
Oscar.
I imagined like my arms going down. I don't really have any childhood memories, but I felt like my arms were going down, but when I opened my eyes, they were only like that far apart from each other.
Mm-hmm. This did not require childhood memories, but to kind of get in that child kind of way of thinking, just to be an imaginative kind of. Think about what a five, not necessarily you, but a five-year-old who's very imaginative would be. Now, before I get to the next person, there's some important things I talk about. You could have opened your eyes like this and had your hands like this and been successful or failed. You could have been like this and been successful or failed. You could have been like this and been successful or failed. Let me tell you why. Kind of depends on what you're thinking. Some people, it won't move because of fear. And then that's inhibited the process, and you've failed. Then what would we do? Then we'd take care of those fears, we'd talk about it, and then try again if it was important for us. But let's say you did this. You're experiencing the effect, but when you open your eyes, your hands are in the same place. Why? Because it's kind of like in your hypnotic personality. If somebody would jerk up, you'd come back to position. If you get pulled down, you come back to position. So the fact that when you opened your eyes, your hands hadn't moved is not indicative. What's important is, did you feel any twitching down or twitching up? You see? The other thing what might happen is sometimes people will go in the opposite direction. At first when I started doing this, I thought they were giving me the hypnotic middle finger. Then I realized by people sharing, they go, oh, what actually was happening is I was feeling the tugging up, which would pull me over unless I resisted against it. So it was because of the feeling of going up that they pulled down, right? If I had you hold your hand out like this, and I pushed down your hand, you'd fall over unless you leaned back, right? So that's they're just compensating for the experience. And over here, in some people's mind, if they don't pull up against the resistance, they'd be pulled over this way. And so they will go like this. What's important is, do you feel some twitching, pulsating, that kind of thing going on? And you mentioned that you felt that, right? Good.
Yes. Now, the funny thing is, I've demonstrated this to a lot of church groups. I have done the demonstration, so I knew what to expect. But it still happened.
This does not require deceit or ignorance for it to work.
But I'm thinking, oh, yeah, I got it. I know what's going to happen.
All you have to do is be willing to let it happen.
Okay.
Yeah, these are standard type of demonstrations that people do for hypnosis. But we don't have to surprise people. They don't have to be ignorant.
For me, I could see the balloon. I could see the rope. But I couldn't feel the tugging up. And on the other hand, I could see the pail. And whenever you had mentioned dropping something in, I could really feel that. But I couldn't feel...
You know what? Generally, by doing this, having done this with hundreds of people, for some reason, people are able to experience the bucket, on average, better than the balloon.
Yeah,
I don't know.
And my balloon started going up after I saw the bucket. You know, after I got over the belief that caffeine's interfering with whatever's going on, and not have the kid, it's more fun than worried about the
interference.
Yeah. Well, I've had the bucket experience. I can't say that I've had the balloon experience. Mm-hmm. I think that that's where I was carrying something and it got really heavy.
Yeah.
But I haven't had a balloon type.
I don't know why that is. I think maybe it's because both your shoulders and arms are starting to get tired. And the lifting of the balloon kind of cancels out the tired heaviness of this hand. But then there's this natural heaviness that's going in both arms, but it gets magnified by the bucket. And so what we do is we exacerbate the already feelings of heaviness that's starting to happen in the arm anyway by the thinking about heaviness. So I think it makes it easier. We're working with an effect that's already happening anyway. So that's my theory, but I don't know what it is. Good. Stand up. Good. Stand up, put your hands out like this. Straight out, palms together, interlock your fingers, straighten your elbows, push forward with your knuckles, thumb on top of the other thumb, but not like this, like this.
Like this?
Yeah. Good. Concentrate. Close your eyes. Concentrate on my voice. Push your palms together. And as you push your palms together, think stuck like glue. Stuck like glue. And as you push your palms together, think of glue, glue, glue. Think about it. Push the air out. The more you push air out, the tighter the glue dries. It gets on your fingers. Think about that glue dripping onto your fingers and drying. Stuck like glue, stuck like glue. Now, try to pull them apart. You cannot. Try, but you cannot. Try, but you cannot. Good. Stop trying. Leave your hands exactly where they are. Look at them. Open your eyes, look around. Good. And when you put your arms bent, they'll unlock. Bend your elbows and your fingers, unlock. Good. Okay, sit down. Sharing time. Same or different than before?
Well, it was good for me because all my fear was erased, so I really got into it.
Mm-hmm. That's right. Good. Same or different?
It was different for me because I had to prove that I could separate my connects from myself.
Why?
I don't know. Like, I can do this. I can undo them from the belief.
Why would that be? If you notice, I was quite different in the two. One of them was, hey, you know, gosh, if you don't mind, it'd be nice if you could help me out here. If you could please stand up and, you know, just be like a child. And then what I'm doing is I'm being very maternal or non-directive or permissive. These are words to this. Okay? Some people respond better to that approach. The second one, I was directive, forceful, paternal. Some people respond better than that, to that. Some people will respond well to both. But some people, what happens is, if you start coming on real forceful like that, they'll feel like they have to prove that it's not working. And so, I would be reluctant to use techniques with you that are like that, because it would be a part of you that says, I got to show them that's not going to work, or that you haven't got control over me, or you can't push me around. You're not the boss of me, kind of stuff. See? So this is permissive versus authoritarian or directive versus non-directive. Tells me a little bit about your hypnotic personality. Could anybody else tell me similar or different for you?
Can I just ask if there's a gender generality with the permissive or authoritative?
I don't know if it's been documented through research, but it seems like men tend to go into jobs that correlate with doing well in a directive way. For example, so that's kind of a long-winded response to your question. Soldiers respond well to directive, policemen, firemen, these kinds of things where there's hierarchy and orders being barked out, men respond well to that. There might be a difference in a man barking out orders like I just did, and the receptivity of a man as opposed to a woman barking orders out like that. There might be difference in the receptivity to women, me barking out orders, or a woman barking out orders like that. Because I was stand up, hands out, fingers up, do this, do that, do this. And a lot of it has to do with our rapport. If you figure what I'm doing is offering you experience where if you follow along, I'm going to help provide you with an experience you want, you might be willing to put up with me being that way. If you can, some people prefer that. It's just don't nice mouth me to death. Just tell me what to do and I'll do it. Let's get on with it. So different people's personalities. Old time hypnotists used to do, well actually still a lot of hypnotists do, these kinds of what they call suggestibility tests on clients and potential clients and subjects and potential subjects before they do hypnosis with them, because they'd use inductions that were permissive on people who responded well to permissive suggestibility tests. These authoritarian inductions on people who responded well to directive or authoritarian inductions. Pretty much the inductions I'll be teaching you do not require that distinction. They'll work no matter who you're working with. But it's useful later on because we're going to start discussing permissive versus the more authoritarian or directive approach in therapy. Because there's times when you need to be permissive and times when you need to be directive. And I'll talk about that and demonstrate that because you're going to be watching videos of me doing therapy. Good. Well, that's all kind of interesting. Anyone else care to share what it was like to do that? You know, it was interesting. Did you know how some of you got your palms apart but your fingers were still stuck together? And I said the glue gets on your fingers and dries. And you could get that much, but you couldn't get it any further. It's kind of interesting. Anyway, a little more input on that. Can anyone else tell me more about what that was like? Yes?
I don't know, for me, just your tone of voice is just all so different. I totally disengaged. I mean, that comes from, you know, mother being overbearing and all of that. You know, so I totally knew where all that came from.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
And then, of course, I went along because I'm a nice person and I, you know, I don't want to screw anything up. So, you know, so that's my step.
Okay. And so, you know, that's a perfect example I'm talking about. Some people, and it doesn't, I don't think it's so, you know, there may be some gender differences, but it's more just personal kind of differences. So, people are different. Kim?
Part of me just felt a little bit like challenged by it, and I said, no, I want to have the experience, so just go along with the guy.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, so that was it. And I go, you know, I could pull these things apart if I want to.
Now, but I said, try.
Yeah, and I kept saying,
but you cannot, did you try?
I kind of got this thing about the word try. Just kind of
what's that mean?
Yeah, it just means kind of like a rig for a failed effort, I guess.
Okay.
You said pull them apart, it probably would.
But that's not what I wanted you to do. Okay. There is so much BS going on in hypnosis and NLP schools. And a lot of people have been contaminated by it. And one of them is they're educating people to believe that try means fail. Almost everything that you've ever succeeded with came as a result of what?
Effort.
That's right. To try simply means to put effort into it. That's what try means. Put effort into doing something. So without effort, there's no success at all. So defining try as fail is illogical. Okay? Try means put effort into it. Okay? Did you put any effort into pulling your hands apart? Because anything other than this is success. If you go like this, look, I got them apart, didn't work. Oh, wait a minute. Anything that was, you know, not this, any resistance at all is because of what? Suggestion. Suggestion, right?
Yeah.
So we're going to be breaking some of, or I'm going to be challenging, or I'm going to be giving my personal opinion about some of the things out there. So, Kim, you've probably read somewhere try means fail or heard that, and then so then when I say try, what does it mean? You don't know. What does Cal mean when he says try? Well, right now I have defined some terms. What we did is it's called challenging the phenomenon. We create a phenomenon that occurs through suggestion, and then we challenge it. For example, if we get someone into the lightest state of hypnosis called hypnoidal, level one, or stage one, they should experience eye lock by suggestion, or eye catalepsy. And you're all going to do that to each other. That's simply taking the hypnosis, then you will, through suggestion, lock their eyelids down. Then you'll say, try to open them, but you cannot. Try, but you cannot. If you put no effort into opening them, then you are no longer following the suggestions. Because we need to have you have the experience of trying and not being able to. Good. Take a break. Take 10. Oh. I better wait till everybody comes back. It's just 2.5 hours to go. What a beautiful 2.5 hours it's going to be. How you doing, Jim?
Great.
And I really need to speak
some Spanish.
Nice,
Alice.
Can you hear me?
Girl sitting by me is so thin. I would never take a cookie in the air. I don't care how. It's
those
like
chocolate chips aren't moving.
Eating her.
She's such a tiny little thing.
That's not the way to eat.
That's not even an option for me.
That's a surprise. I just want to make sure I can hear you too. So and you can hear us just fine, I think.
Too strange.
I love that. I love that.
my brother has a dog named Cooper, where it was saying, you know, that should be for your child when you have children. You know, Cooper's such a good name. Cooper.
It is.
Archer. Yeah, that's so great. Where'd you get Archer from?
I came out of a baby book.
Really? I have never heard that.
It's a baby book that correlates for the last 100 years the popularity of names. Because I didn't want, you know, my husband was, his middle name is Michael, and he's always loved the name Michael.
Yeah.
And I said, no good little names. And you'd be surprised how many there are that you wouldn't think are biblical, but they are.
Yeah.
And Michael is a biblical name. Mm-hmm. And I said, no biblical names. And besides, you call up Michael, and 4 kids in a class will raise their hand.
That is true. That's true.
It's so popular. And so I wanted a name that was not popular, that was unique, but that had personality and was strong, and you could write it out for business, and you could also write it out for an artist.
You'd be president. Or an artist, right? Or a Van Gogh,
yeah.
Huh?
Right. And Archer is just a very strong name.
It really is. It's lovely. Yeah. Now, where did you get your name from?
My name is Astra Andromeda.
The stars.
Yeah. My parents were yuppies taking an astronomy course. So, like, my brother's name is Rigel Orion.
I love it.
And my first name, my mom got out of a baby book, which means starlight in Greek. And then my dad picked my middle name. And then,
what's your middle? Astra?
Andromeda.
Okay. God, beautiful thing.
My husband had a train of thought that maybe we should pick out celestial names, like me and my brother. But after hearing Archer, he's like, I kind of like that.
Kind of grows on you, right?
Yeah. And all of his friends are like, well, it has some really good nicknames to it. Archie or Arthur, Art, Artie, you know, and, you know, Arch. You really can't make something up and tease something.
Like it's sort of growing to itself.
Yeah.
I love it.
And it fits both of our religions as well. Since he's like Native American, mm-hmm. Catholic. And I'm Wiccan, so it kind of correlates with both.
Oh, wow, that is so cool.
Yeah, so.
Yeah. I only think of puppy names. They're babies for me. Because I could lay eggs. I think if I could lay eggs, maybe. Or if I could have puppies, maybe. Really? Enjoy dogs more than little babies.
I don't blame you on that one. It's just a good thing I work out of my house.
Order.
Really?
She was my favorite person in the whole world.
Oh, and that's good.
He's B2B company then.
Yeah.
You have a boy?
Oh,
Does not fly license
oh, wow.
Yeah. Nothing.
I mean, a shot. And it's, you
it's expensive. $700,000.
No, probably worse.
Versus yeah. if you go to
those
Arizona
to work
or Oregon or any other state that is abusive.
Okay, so
yeah.
now you get to work every day. So it's nice to be able to walk down the road and
sleep
later.
$2.
I have about a half an hour drive, but the biggest yes, traffic jam I have is sometimes I get stopped by the tractor. And I got to wait
until it's
safe.
Yeah. yeah.
so well, I can't really complain about it.
I'm going to start whining right now since I have to go past 17 vendors.
Yeah.
And occasionally I get stopped by the road by a tractor.
Yeah.
And it takes about 12 minutes to get into
it is
the office.
It's
59
and
about 20 minutes. We need to live in town. We need to live in town. Now she has her clientele that's getting
it's not good.
I don't mind.
Is this food?
No, it's white.
Oh, you mean to rent one?
Yeah.
I'm going to make sure we get a bed.
Your people are phenomenal. I asked them if there was a bike shop nearby. Here's my information.
John, wait. What? Hi, Celeste. I should have heard her voice then, right? She waves. Say hi to Celeste.
Hi, Celeste.
Here's a more detailed article on information we just went through. How come I don't have enough of this? Okay, I might have had a few other articles.
Yes.
So that was kind of fun. What are you guys going to do now?
I have to move this.
Oh,
there it is.
Oh, yes, that's mine. That's fine.
My
bag
is
here. Anybody need a blanket?
There's a perfume right here.
One of the things you were supposed to be doing before you came to class was to begin reading that induction over and over and over again. I do not require that you memorize inductions because you can just read them. But you have to be able to read them and not sound like you're reading them. So if you haven't done that in a while, that's your homework tonight. You need to be able to read it and not sound like you're reading it. Very, very important. You also need to learn how to handle paper quietly. What? Because it doesn't do any good if you spend hours and hours rehearsing your script, if then you sound like you've got a piece of paper that you're rattling around. So you got to learn how to handle that quietly until you get it memorized. What I'd like to do now is I'd like to demonstrate that script. And I'm not going to be reading it. I know about four or five or six different ways to do it right, and so you'll see that I'm not reading it. Don't have it out in front of you because it'll just drive you crazy because I'm not going to do it word for word. But since I know about 10 different ways to do it right, and you don't, when you do it with each other, do it exactly as written. Don't start paraphrasing it because you don't know what you can change and still have it work. So, choose someone to help me out. John, if I have somebody sit here, are they going to be able to see me?
Yes.
Well, they only got to see from like here up.
Well, they can see from about here up.
Okay, that's good enough.
Instead of on the stool?
No, because I'm going to sit down too. And if they're way up like that, they might be a little nervous about falling off. But I've never had anyone fall off on one of these. And if they did, I could catch them. All right. Let's see. I need someone who would be comfortable coming up here and letting me not read the script, do the script with them. Would you help me out? Would you let me do it?
Sure.
Would you like that?
Sure.
Nice and easy, someone from the front row. And she just had cookies, so I know she's very happy. Mm-hmm. All right. Pretty fun, huh? Would you like to do hypnosis with me?
Sure.
I'd like you to start with your feet flat. Good. Your hands just like that's perfect. Is it okay if during the session I touch your hand, your arm, your shoulder, maybe even your forehead?
Sure.
Good. She's starting to go already. Can you hear now? Sure. You're a good subject. Okay. Take a look at my hand. Take a nice deep breath. Exhale. Close your eyes. Good. And you can relax your eyelids so much that they just won't work. Once you're sure that you've done that, hold on to that relaxation and then check them and make sure they won't work. You'll find your eyebrows work, but your eyelids remain closed. Good. Stop checking and go deeper in. Good. Now the quality of relaxation that you're allowing in your eyelids is causing them to flutter. Take that feeling of relaxation to the top of your head. So that the top of your head can begin to relax like your eyelids are flutter. Now send that feeling of relaxation all the way down. From the top of your head to the tips of your toes. Like a warm wave.
first I'm going to do a little check just to make sure you've understood and followed my instruction. In a moment, I'm going to pick up your right arm by the wrist. If you followed my instructions up to this point, it should be heavy, loose, and relaxed. Let me do all the lifting, and then when I pop it down, it will be deeper relaxed. And good. Perfect. One more time. Take your attention to your efforts around and relax. So much that they won't work. And then, just like before, test your relation. Good. Stop testing. As I touch you on the shoulder, just go deeper. Good. Now take that feeling of relaxation. Just like before, send all the way down across your body, as if you could go 10 miles. Good. The deeper you go, the better you do. The better you do. Our third time's a charm. One more time. Take your attention to your eye. Just like before, test it. Good. Stop testing. Good. Now, take that feeling of relaxation to the top of your head. Once again, just send all the way down across your body. This time, is it? As I count from one down to five, let it be as if we could double this relaxation one more time, mentally, physically, emotionally. One, deeper, and deeper relax. Two, as if all you cared about was the sound of my voice, and how deeply relaxed you could go. Good. Let every gentle breath that you exhale take you deeper. As if every gentle breath that you exhale, you step down the staircase of relaxation. Good, pure, cool, deeper, deeper relaxed. Five, way down. Deeper, deeper relaxed. Good. Now, in a moment, I'm going to count, starting with another one, lightly touching on the fourth. And each touch and each number will cause your eyelids to twitch and tighten. One, eyelids twitching and tightening and squeezing tighter and tighter. Two, twitching and tightening, tighter and tighter. Three, tighter and tighter, squeezing now, squeezing tight, 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 tight. Four, stuck like glue, stuck like glue, stuck like glue. Five, now there's stuck like glue. You try and don't move, but you cannot. You try, but you cannot. You try, but you cannot. And if I stop talking, you'll be very loud. You stop. Okay, I'll just go to you. You'll be very loud. In a moment, I'm going to have you hold your hand out in front of you and just leave it there. If that's okay with you, gently nod your head. Raise your arm and leave it right there in front. Good. Now we lock up the elbow. We lock up the shoulder. I give it another tug and it comes stiff and rigid like a bar of steel. Stiff and rigid like a bar of steel. Good. Now any pressure down and it springs up. Pressure down and it springs up. Pressure down and it springs up. In a moment I'll count from 1 to 3. When I get to 3, you'll try to lower it, but you'll not be able to. 1, 2, 3. Harder, 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 harder. Good. Stop trying. Unlock your front. Unlock your shoulder. Pop your hand down. There you go. Deeper. 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 Down. 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 Deeper. In a moment, once again, I'm going to have you help me deepen this relaxation. In a moment, I'm going to have you slowly count out loud from 1 to 10. Between each number, I will say the words, deeper, relax. And as we do that together, we'll be able to go much deeper. No matter how deep and relaxed you go, you'll always be able to sit safe and comfortable in this chair. So now, slowly, out loud, count from 1 to 10. I want you to listen very carefully. In a moment, I'm going to count from 1 to 10. And then I want you to count exactly that way. When you count this way from me, you'll be able to count louder, and the sound of your voice will only serve to take you deeper. Listen very carefully. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 7, 8, 9, 10. Once again, it's 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 7, 8, 9, 10. Please count out loud that way. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 7, 8, 9, 10. Can you count that way for me? Good. Perfect. Good. Beautiful. Do that one more time out loud for me. A little louder. Good. Perfect.
snap my fingers twice. That's okay with you. Gently nod your head. Good. In a moment, I'm going to have you hold your arm out in front of you. Once again, like you did. That's okay with you, nod your head. Good. Now let's just hold your arm straight out right now. And leave it right there. Now, as I gently brush the back of your hand, it becomes numb or begins to tingle. Numb and tingle. So that all you can feel is numb or tingle. Nothing I do here can affect you in any way except to make you numb or tingle. So that you can feel nothing. Nothing. Every touch, numb, tingle, numb, and tingle, numb, and tingle, numb, and tingle. Nothing, nothing, nothing. What did you do? Anything could have done terrible. In a moment, I'm going to touch you on the back of my hand. Then I want you to look down at my hand. You'll see a thumb mark that I placed in your hand, pinching it. And you'll be very impressed. Look, don't pinch it. And you can see the thumb mark I left in your hand. Now close your eyes. And deeper. And deeper. The deeper you go, the better you feel. And the better you feel, the more you let it deeply relax. In a moment, I'm going to have you open your eyes once again and remain in hypnosis. I am now putting a very beautiful, multicolored scarf, a beautiful cloth across your right knee. I'm putting there a beautiful, multicolored scarf, a cloth of many colors. In a moment, I'm going to count from 1 to 3. When I get to 3, I want you to open your eyes and describe it to me. A beautiful, multicolored cloth that I put across to me. 1, 2, 3. Now, describe the multicolored, beautiful scarf. Like the head? Describe it. That's twirl. Good. Close your eyes. Deeper. In a moment, I'm going to count from 1 to 3. When I get to 3, you'll open your eyes. You remain in hypnosis. And I will say that we're done for now. And then what you'll do is you'll walk over to where you were sitting before. And for some reason, you're going to have this craving for chocolate chip cookie. But you're not going to be able to see it. It's nowhere to be found. And you're going to suspect that maybe I took it. That's right. In a moment, I'm going to count from 1 to 3. I will say that we're done for now. We will thank you for helping us out. We will then go back over and sit where you were sitting before, feeling very good. You have this strong craving for chocolate chip cookie, but you won't be able to find it anywhere, and you will suspect that maybe I have it, that maybe I have it. So now here we go. 1, 2. And you open your eyes. And you do feel good, don't you? Did you enjoy that? Did you feel good?
Yeah.
Good. Thank you very much. Let's see. Just carefully walk over to your seat.
Now let me tell you about some of the things we did. Now, for you folks that are watching on the webcam, I know you couldn't hear all that. But you have the script for all of that. You have it in the Elman Banyan induction. you also have it in the level one manual, the script for doing the over-depth testing. So it's all there. We're going to spend time with it each and every day. How you doing? You're giving me a funny look. How come you're laughing? What's the matter? You're looking at me kind of suspiciously.
Yeah.
What's up?
I don't know, I just had a feeling. You're just like cookies.
You want your cookies back.
I don't think you took them though.
Come here. I'll give you your cookies back if you'll just sit there in that chair. Kind of fun, huh?
You didn't look like a thief.
But I really like cookies, you know. When I was a kid, I used to take them out of the cookie jar. Sometimes it's hard to get that out of my habit of. Look at me right here. Oh, they're going to feel so good.
It's so funny. There's all these people saying these good things about you.
You want your cookies back? Would you like it better if I hadn't took your cookies?
No.
You like it that you took your cookies?
This is funny.
Women are so complex.
Funny.
Okay, look at me. Sleep. Sound of my voice, touch of my hand. Very active breathing helps and guides me. Can you breathe deeper than that? I want to give you a reward for doing this with me today. I'm going to plant a wonderful suggestion in your mind, and that is confidence. A new level of confidence. Because you experienced this, you are a true believer. You know that hypnosis works, and especially after you emerge, you're going to know that hypnosis works. And this is going to cause you to have more confidence in hypnosis, in hypnotizing other people, in hypnotizing yourself, be it self-hypnosis, or using hypnotic suggestion to improve your life. You are going to be a true believer. And this is going to cause you to have more confidence, more success in this profession. And that feeling of confidence and success will exude through your entire life, your personal life, your business life, your spiritual life. Every bit of everything that's important to you has been improved by this experience today. In a moment, I'm going to count from 1 to 3. This time you will completely and totally emerge from hypnosis. If you and I ever want to do hypnosis together again, if you want to do hypnosis with me and I want to do hypnosis with you, you'll be able to easily, instantly go back to the deepest level of hypnosis you've ever experienced by simply wanting to do it with me and by me tugging my tie and saying the words. Is that okay with you? Okay, here we go. One, getting ready to come up, feeling so good, so fine, so excited. Two, coming up more and more, you just want to smile and smile. Three, and you do feel good, don't you? Stay right there. Would you be willing to answer questions from the class?
Sure.
I want you to ask her questions first about the experience, not me. And you guys on the internet, you can ask questions too. Just let John know, and he can read it out, or I can talk to you. Questions for Seb.
Oh, go ahead.
You do it.
Why did you think that Cal took your cookie?
I know he didn't, because I knew the suggestion. I thought to myself, this isn't going to work, right? And as I sat there, I just realized, like, I was getting angry. I was getting really mad at you. I didn't know why. And, then when you said, why are you looking like that? I realized I was giving you this dirty look. Gosh. And it was very unconscious. It was so, I consciously knew, there's no way he did.
Consciously, she thought, that will never work.
Yeah.
But... the subconsciously, she started feeling angry.
Yeah. So I knew all along, like, I knew that it's not true, and at the same time, while I was feeling angry and giving him this dirty look, I also knew I was doing that, but I couldn't control that.
Could you see the cookies?
Yeah, I saw the cookies, yeah. Yeah, I saw the cookies.
So what does that tell us? We did not have level six. Level six is the ability to have negative hallucinations. But that's okay. What level do I want?
Four above.
Four. The other, if I would have got five, would have been six? Wonderful. That's nice. Better, but not required. See? Good. Keep asking questions.
Is it Mark?
Yeah. If you thought he was a thief, why did you trust him to put you back under and went back to the chair?
The thief part, I think, was just something that was funny to me. Like, I started laughing because of that thought, and I just kind of went with it. It just... Well, I trust him, and I knew I was in hypnosis. I mean, you don't lose awareness and consciousness of what's happening. You just kind of go with what you feel.
If you ever felt like you were in danger, or I was really going to rip you off, what would you have done?
I think it would have just snapped out of it.
Exactly. Because the protective part
is
always functioning.
It's so weird, because you know everything's going on. And I've watched so many stage shows, and I said, no way. I've never been hypnotized this deep. And it's the first time. Yeah, you're right. I'm a true believer now.
Can we ask her to count?
Here, put your hands out like this. Please count out loud.
One.
Okay, I almost ran out of time because I put a time limit on. I forgot.
Yeah.
Giving you guys all this stuff. Okay.
So, what did it feel like?
Very heavy, very relaxed. Like, I can relax very deeply. So, yeah, like, just a very, almost euphoric feeling.
Were you still aware of your body?
Yeah, I noticed when I was, like, you know, getting, lowering my body, and I could feel the side where I was leaning. I usually lean when I go into hypnosis. But I could feel, I think it was going like this, but I'm not sure. Yeah, it feels, very heavy.
And the scarf, was it really real to you?
I don't think that was real to me. I could see it, but not, like, I knew what it was in theory, but I don't know if I saw it.
Yeah. You looked down at it with your eyes open and said, it's twisted.
Yeah, like, but I didn't see it. Like, I could still see the floor where it would be. But I knew that it was...
Was it translucent?
No.
It was just not there.
I don't think it was there, yeah.
Okay. That's why I had her open her eyes. I didn't want to do it with the eyes closed. So what we had there was compliance, but we didn't have five. Bummer. Don't need it. We need four. What was the test for four? Amnesia by suggestion. And analgesia and anesthesia. And sometimes people will pass one test for a death, but not another. The analgesia is stage four. Analgesia is blockage of pain. And I put her thumb mark is still there. I dug my thumb so hard into the back of her hand, it left a mark that you can still see. Okay?
I didn't feel any pain.
Yeah. Did you feel touch?
Yeah.
Okay, so touch means we didn't get anesthesia, which is five, at level five, but analgesia is level four. If you're familiar with the Heron scale, we'll get into it in more detail on it in the class.
And what was the test for five? She wouldn't have been able to feel even your touch.
Yeah, she didn't pass five. She was compliant, and so she followed. She did what she thought I wanted her to do, and we had a false positive, so to speak, okay? And so we, anesthesia is available at level five. We didn't get that. Analgesia, which is blockage of pain, which is all you ever really need, is level four. And then, what was the other question? And then amnesia was the other one, the number six block. And also the fact that she lost the numbers in the induction. There's a point. First you went aphasic. Aphasic is where she stops counting out loud. but the numbers hadn't gone away yet. And then I say, nothing, nothing, nothing. And then what happened?
Yeah, there's like colors and stuff.
And then they just went away, yeah. Right? And so that was amnesia by suggestion, inability to recall the next number. Okay. So we're going to really get into this nuts and bolts of this stuff, because it's really important that you understand. The, I forget, I think it's Weber wrote, in, who wrote the Seven Habits of Highly Effective People?
Covey.
Yeah, begin with the end in mind. And never start an induction unless you know what level you want to take them to. You know, it's like getting in your car and driving to the store not knowing the store is. What did you get out of that experience that perhaps they didn't get just by watching?
That you can be totally aware. I mean, I've done this induction before too on my clients, and the disbelief or the skepticism that you have, it's overcome once you have that trust and that belief. And again, I just kind of let myself go with it because I said, oh, I've done this. I know what's coming next. And I was allowed myself to experience it. Yeah.
Did you like it?
Yeah, it was very nice. Yeah.
Would you like to go back there for a minute or two?
Yeah, I've gone there for a while.
Okay. Look at me and sleep. As I gently rock you, just let yourself go back in that beautiful, comfortable place. And I'll be talking to the class. You'll hear what I'm saying. And in fact, you're going to learn it better because you're in this wonderful, relaxed state. So just as I rock you, just let yourself go back and forth and deeper. Rocking is a beautiful deepening technique. Now, I'll tell you what. There's a whole bunch of schools out there that will teach you to spend 10, 20 minutes longer getting a deep state of hypnosis. Wrong. And every single session. Wrong. Okay, once you've got someone in hypnosis, you want to do them and yourself a service of putting in a post-hypnotic suggestion for rapid reinduction of hypnosis. What do? I say, next time you want to do hypnosis with me and I want to do hypnosis with you, all I'm going to do is tug my tie and say the word sleep. You instantly go right back down there. If that's okay with you, nod your head. And so then we had this set up. Why in the world would I ever do a 2-minute long induction again? You see? Because the trick is getting there in the first place. Once you've been there, you're eager to go back. You just need an agreed upon signal, you see? And so there's just no reason in the world to do these progressive, long visualization, relaxation inductions. They're antiquated. Only time I would ever do that is that I didn't care if they went to sleep. And as I said before, sleep isn't hypnosis. So if I'm doing hypnosis to bore someone into sleep, then maybe I would do a progressive relaxation. But wouldn't it make more sense to hypnotize them first, take that, oh, I don't know, 4 or 5 seconds, and then do the progressive relaxation? Wouldn't it be much more powerful if that's all I'm trying to do is relax them or bore them into sleep? Okay. And now, say your attention and my attention comes back to you. Now, what I'd like you to do is just whenever you're ready, over the next minute or so, longer if you want, just bring yourself back, because I want everyone to see that I'm not really in control here. You're the one that's in control. And when you're ready, just emerge yourself. When you feel like you're ready, just open your eyes, and you'll feel wonderful. And over the next, oh, probably 10 or 20 seconds after opening your eyes, you're fully emerged. Feels good, then. Tell them what that experience was like.
I was more awake. I could feel my body kind of sleeping. My awareness was right there. Still, I was very deep.
And the only way you can tell how deep someone is to do testing. And I didn't do any testing. But typically, people eagerly go back to whatever level you had before, because that's where they know to go, that's where they expect to go. And then there's a tendency to go deeper. And we will talk a little bit more about compounding and pyramiding and that kind of stuff. Can you answer some questions? Any questions for Sid?
Well, I have one, I guess, for from both of you is that the first time that Cal induced you, I noticed you were breathing somewhat very heavy. Did you notice that you were breathing heavy?
The deep breaths?
The deep breaths. Mm-hmm. They were really deliberate.
Here's a fun question and answer to you. What does hypnosis feel like? Thank you. Give her a hand. As she floats back to her head.
Chair wood cookie.
What does hypnosis feel like?
Like you're on the verge of falling asleep. Like between that waking, sleeping stage.
What do you base that upon?
How I feel every night when I go to sleep.
Okay. Who else? What does hypnosis feel like?
For me, it just feels like a total release of any anxiety or any effort on my part. And my guess is maybe it feels a little bit different for everyone.
It seems sometimes that I start to become sleepy, but then I seem to get this awareness. This kicks in. It's a different.
All of your clients are going to have a mental expectation of what hypnosis is going to feel like. And so I want you to know something. Let's start with the definition of hypnosis. Here's your most shortest, most exact definition on page 7. 4 words. Paragraph 1, under what is hypnosis? A heightened state of suggestibility. A heightened state of suggestibility. Okay, normal waking consciousness, which I talked about here, is zero hypnosis, normal level of suggestibility, because everybody's suggestible to some level or another, normal waking state. So when we start talking about levels 1 to 3, those are heightened levels of suggestibility. It means they're more suggestible. Okay, suggestibility is the ability to accept suggestions to such a degree that they affect your beliefs, habits, and perceptions. The more profoundly you're hypnotized, the more profoundly those suggestions will affect your beliefs, habits, and emotions, and perhaps even the data stored in your mind, just pure memory. So, we have level 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, and 6. 6 being more profoundly suggestible than level 1, or level 0, which is normal waking consciousness. So, with that in mind, what does hypnosis feel like? Feels like whatever it's suggested to feel like. If you're suggesting profound relaxation, it's going to feel like relaxation. If we suggest arm catalepsy, boing, stiff and rigid, now hypnosis feels like stiff and rigid. If we say, now we're going to go back to when you were 5 years old, 5, 4, 3, 2, 1, be there. 5 years old, it's your birthday, what's happening? Now hypnosis feels like your 5th birthday. Hypnosis, in and of itself, doesn't feel like anything. It feels like whatever is suggested. It could be happy, sad. It could be clear mind, dull mind. It could be heavy, light, loose, limp, and relaxed, or rigid and cataleptic. Hypnosis doesn't feel like anything, because hypnosis is defined as a heightened state of suggestibility. So in and of itself, what does a heightened state of suggestibility feel like? Nothing. It feels like whatever is suggested. Is that clear? let's take a look at the Level 1 manual. Your homework for tonight is to get at least halfway through this manual. Let me tell you about what I'm going to do. I'm going to save all the good stuff for class because it makes me look good and I have a great time. All the nitty-gritty detail, if I went through that in class, you'd go out of your freaking minds and fall asleep. So that is for you to study on your own. However, if it's important, if there's something that needs to be clarified, I will answer questions about it in the morning. Every morning I will go ding, questions about anything covered so far. So your job will be to read through this first half of the manual before you come to class tomorrow. Could be tonight, could be some in the morning, whatever. I'm going to quickly glaze through that, hitting the highlights and anything I want to just pay special attention to. So who can be hypnotized? Anyone of normal intelligence and who's mentally healthy can be hypnotized. Page 8, model the mind. We just spent half a day on that. Unconscious mind, I'm channel. Product of TV here. Page 9, we have the subconscious mind. We've talked about that. The conscious mind, unconscious mind, subconscious mind. We've talked about ad nauseum. Critical factor, or critical function. I want you to remember that it is a comparing mechanism. It compares what's already held in the subconscious mind with that which is coming in. If it is the same or similar or reinforces what you already do, habits, whatever you think, whatever you believe, or whatever you feel, it will tend to go in like a hot knife through butter and reinforce it. If it's counter to what you already think, believe, and feel, it goes into the data file. Long-term memory, you know about it, but it's not actionable. It's nothing you'd really act on. Someone says, I'm sorry to tell you this, but the world ends tomorrow. Well, now in data file, you go, Cal seems to think the world's going to end tomorrow. And I start doing all kinds of crazy things. Whatever you're going to do on the last day on Earth, right? But you don't. That information is not actionable. You don't believe it. It doesn't change your emotions at all. So what is hypnosis? High state of suggestibility. What is hypnotherapy? The term therapy could be broadly defined as anything that we do that moves someone towards health and wholeness. I mean, there's therapeutic skin cream, right? And there's therapeutic massage. There's all these different things that are meant to bring you towards health and wholeness. So if you use hypnosis to help move someone towards health and wholeness, then that is hypnotherapy. Okay. Basic versus advanced hypnotic techniques. I'm on page 10 in case you're trying to keep up with me. Basic techniques are simple inductions, direct suggestion, hypnosis, that kind of stuff. Advanced techniques is what we're going to get into in about 3 days. Age regression requires these deep levels of hypnosis. Okay? So age regression, parts therapy, gestalt therapies, all this kind of good stuff. Cautions and ethics. Please read that. If you have any questions, let me know. As NGH members, you will be held account for their ethics standards. And, you know, they're pretty much like everybody else's ethics. You've got to keep your client welfare first. We don't enter into personal relationships with our clients. And this kind of thing. So, look at that. I have a code of ethics right here. You'll get another copy at the end of the class, but this will... how come I don't have enough of these either? Okay. We'll see how far they go and then how many I need. Please... take one and pass it along. Client welfare. Members shall make the physical and mental well-being of each client a prime consideration. B, client safety. Members shall not engage in verbal, physical, or sexual abuse of a client. Practice limits. Members shall use hypnotism strictly within the limits of their training and competence and in conformity to the laws of their states. Advertising. Members shall be truthful in their advertising. Referred practice. Members shall engage in hypnotic work with a client regarding a medical or mental disease only on written referral from appropriately licensed medical or mental health professional, except when otherwise provided for by state law. In fact, I think they have a brand new, newer version of this that you're going to get in your membership packet. So this is probably a little bit out of date. How many don't have them? One, two. Wait, how many? I just handed out like eight of them. How can...
Didn't come on this line.
Okay.
He came in with those that you asked him to make when you were at the time.
Those were code of ethics sheets?
Well, whatever you ran short of.
Yeah, that was... Okay, yeah. I'm talking about code of ethics. What I'm reading right now. How many didn't get? One, two, three, four, five, six, seven, eight, nine, 10, 11. Good. I think John just went to the gift. When he comes back, I'll have him go get him if that's not what he's doing now. He's probably got Danny printing it out. What are you doing, John?
Is it the rest of the handouts that we gave out?
Is that the code of ethics?
No, it's not.
Will you please tell Danny I need about about a dozen of them? Wait. Here's the master. What do you got for me there?
This is the other one, and your copy's sitting outside the door.
Yeah, and I've been trying to dash out there, but I keep thinking of stuff to talk about. Okay, Model of the Mind. This is for the people that didn't get the Model of the Mind. I think you can go this way, but you got the Model of the Mind over here.
No.
You didn't get it over there. Okay. It's a very detailed 10-page article about this. Just keep moving them around until everybody's got one. About eight of you have them. So did you tell Danny about the ethics thing? Okay. So those will be arriving in about 5 minutes. Chapter 3, A Brief History of Classical Approaches. This is a very light chapter on, so page 15, Level 1 Manual on the History. These are the guys you'll hear about in the profession all the time. Mesmer, he's the first one in Western civilization to really effectively use suggestibility. Hence the term mesmerized. James Braid, you hear me talk about the order of Braid, and he's the one that coined the term hypnosis. The Esdale State, he's the one that was famous for using hypnosis to create anesthesia, and he used it in the medical environment. Then really, the next really well-known important person was Dr. Sigmund Freud. He kind of put an end, in many ways, to the use of hypnosis in the world of psychiatry. And as he got into doing things which were psychodynamic in nature and using association, that kind of stuff. Freud was known among his peers for not being good at hypnosis. But on Freud's defense, the techniques of the day were not very good. And so everybody could just make these free associations and stuff like that, and they wouldn't work with just about everybody, where hypnosis at the time was only probably effective in 10 to 15% of the cases. Okay. Whoever didn't get the ethics thing, this side of the room, I have. Okay, that's the master. Sorry about that. Maureen is the one who keeps everything running smoothly. She's gone, and so we have a couple of minor kinks.
So we have wrinkles.
You have wrinkles?
He said, Maureen keeps everything running smoothly and she's gone, so we have some wrinkles.
Yeah. She just goes away once in a while just to remind me how important she is. She's still not getting her raise. Thank you, John. Dave Ellman, he's not in every history book. He's not in every class. But Dave Ellman's very important to us. He is our hypno-grandpa. Because he's the one that really emphasized instant and rapid inductions. He's the one, as far as we're concerned, really got things going with age regression. He did a lot of teaching medical professionals hypnosis. And this is his book. Everybody should have a copy of this book. It's a classic book on the subject. It's good. You know, nowadays we have DVDs and we have CDs and all that stuff. He's got transcripts of sessions in here and you can see how he worked and that kind of thing. If he's our hypno-grandpa, then our hypno-daddies would be Gil Boyne and Jerry Kine, who also really kept this teaching alive. Two big teachers. Gil Boyne on the West Coast and Jerry Kine on the East Coast. Interesting thing was, Dave Ellman was not a doctor. He was not a psychologist, a counselor, or anything like that. He's a fellow who just was a lay hypnotist who was interested in hypnosis. He started doing hypnosis shows as a teenager, and then he quit. Does anyone know why? That's right. Yeah, he quit doing hypnosis and hypnosis shows because when he was a teenager, nobody had let them date his daughters or daughters. So he quit that stuff. And then he actually got into, he was a musician, songwriter, got on the radio, producer, and all that kind of stuff. And then one day he was asked to do a stage show for a fundraiser. He said, yeah, I know how to participate in a fundraiser of some kind. He says, I'll do a stage hypnosis show. And there was a doctor in the audience who was impressed and says, will you teach me? And then that started a switch the profession over to teaching. He only taught medical professionals, doctors, dentists, things like that, hypnosis. And he was very much into creating anesthesia and analgesia and doing age regression. So it's a great book. On page 18, they begin to talk about suggestibility and suggestibility tests. We have here, on page 19, we talk about authoritarian versus permissive. I've already covered that. Next, we have the Chevreul's pendulum. I'll be right back. Danny, grab my balls.
We have that song in Texas.
Conducting class without any balls. Everybody grab your balls. Ladies and gentlemen, we are going to play with our Chevreul pendulum.
She's trying to hypnotize me with that thing.
The Chevreul's pendulum is a motion magnifier. That's what it does. You ever seen someone on a swing? what they do is they got their little legs going eater, eater, eater. But because of the pendulum, the nature of the pendulum, it magnifies that motion. And so that little eat, every time you do it, you go more, right? Well, that's what this does, is pendulums are motion magnifiers. And what Chevrolet did was he found out that you can, that subconscious and unconscious material information can be exhibited through muscle movement. But often the muscle movement is so small, you can't even see it. So we use the pendulum as a motion magnifier. This is categorized as a suggestibility test for concentration. Now, if you decide to use suggestibility tests with your clients, do not call them suggestibility tests, because people think suggestibility is gullibility, different. So gullibility is when we fool the conscious mind. Suggestibility is where we willingly accept suggestions that have an effect on the subconscious or unconscious mind. Now, the only problem with this suggestibility test is just about any idiot could pass it, okay? Almost any nincompoop. I always wonder where that came from, nincompoop. Anyway. So, really, the power of a test is only as good as it can make people fail it. If you have a test and nobody fails, it's not really much of a test. So any idiot can pass this. So it's more of a test of compliance. Are they willing to follow instructions? So what we do, whenever we do this test, what we do is we'll lay either like a page with a circle here, or in the appendix I have a page that has a whole circle on it, nothing else, no written words. And we do it ourselves first. Because if we ask them to do it, they might feel a bit silly. And when we do it by ourselves, gosh, you know, the hypnotist didn't die from doing it, so I suppose it's safe for me. By the way, I never do suggestibility tests with clients. Why? Because people might fail. And hypnosis is a confidence game. If you ruin their confidence, there's going to be no game. So I will never chance any kind of suggestibility testing on a client. I do it in groups for demonstrations because most of the people in the group will pass, so as a group they pass. Okay. But as individuals, I don't want them to mess up on a test and then, you know, hurt their ability to believe they can be hypnotized. But these are I'm going to show you some other cool stuff you can do with this too. Okay, so what I do is I will say, if I was to use this with a client, when in my mind, if I do it with a client, I'm not really testing suggestibility so much as I'm testing compliance. What's compliance? Willing and able to follow instructions. Okay, and so I will say, I'm going to hold this ball about an inch over the crosshairs on this little sight we have down there. And now I'm going to concentrate, making no mental effort at all into moving this, no physical effort into moving this. I just want to see if by me concentrating, will it move on its own. So I'll say, I'm going to start thinking up and down, up and down. And I move my eyes up and down, up and down, up and down, up and down. And you'd be kind of amazed, it will start moving all by itself. So long as you don't have your elbow on the table. Because if you have your elbow on the table, it holds the thing in place. Right? See, it's kind of hard to move if my elbow is stuck. Then I can start saying left and right. Left and right. And believe it or not, it'll just start moving on its own. All right. I need someone. I need a victim. I mean, subject. Will you help me since you're up in the front row?
Yes, I will.
Bring, bring your ball over here. And,
thank you. Something like that. Really nice little diagram. There we go. On page 119.
All right. Please hold your ball directly over there. You don't have to look down. It's not. You don't have to look down the side.
Okay. Okay, got it.
There you go. Now I want you to start thinking. Up and down. Up and down. Up and down. Up and down. Eyes up and down. Up and down. Is it moving on its own? Okay, start thinking. Left and down. Left.
What a swing.
That starts going around and around. Around and around. Around and around.
Around
and around.
Yeah.
Yay!
So would this not be a fail-safe suggestibility test?
Well, it depends on what the client thinks. If the client thinks that their ability to be hypnotized is being tested, but they are not compliant and they don't follow instructions, and then they don't pass the test, then you lower their confidence in being hypnotized. So I don't use any suggestibility tests. I suggest you don't. Leave that to the old timers.
Use this like their eyes.
I'm going to talk a little bit later about eye fatigue inductions and stuff like that. I'm going to tell you about some funner stuff. I didn't get into the details of how about all the fruits and nuts that hang from my family tree. You know, one of which was a hypnotist. But I don't know about you, but you know, my family. You know, everybody's got those kinds. But there was this weird thing that I grew up with, and there was a belief that you could tell the gender of a baby by using a pendulum. And some would say, this is a boy, and this is a girl, or they would say, this is a boy, or this is a girl. It doesn't matter. It's whatever you agree to in your mind. Because your unconscious mind, if you're a woman, and if you're pregnant, knows the gender of the baby. But we're not consciously aware of what the unconscious mind is aware of. It knows.
Is that true?
So far, it seems to work most of the time.
You already know.
And there's all this mysticism that goes along with it, saying, oh, you have to hold it over her belly. And then, oh, no, you have to hold it over the left hand, you have to hold over the heart, all this stuff. What's important is that you can access subconscious and unconscious material by use of, all you have to do is set up a language. So you can say, this means boy, you know, clockwise, counterclockwise, female, or you could go boy and girl, whatever you want to do. And so if you have any pregnant friends, go give it a test. Of course, everybody's getting sonograms nowadays and know ahead of time. The other thing that this is really cool for is finding lost objects. If you at one time knew where the object was, I mean, if it fell out of your pocket and you didn't know it, that information isn't here. But have you ever done this? I want to stick this in a safe place where I won't forget it. Then it's in there. We don't have memory problems. We don't. We have recall problems. It's all in there. You know how, like, you wouldn't know all day, you try to, and somebody says something, oh, now I got it. It was always in there. It was a recall problem. So what you can do with this is you can give certain motions meaning. I like giving this for yes. Do you see how natural and intuitive that is? And this for no. That's what I have worked out.
Right.
And yeah, I like simple. Now what I have to do is test it. And what you do is first you have to program it. You program it by going, this means yes, this means yes, this means yes. And then you have to stop it and just think yes. And as you think yes, it should start eventually moving on its own. Now that word has been accepted. You go, this means no, this means no, this means no, this means no. Then you stop it, and you just think, no, no, no. And when it will move without any physical effort on your part. Now, these are not, this isn't psychokinesis. It's not working by brain waves. My hand is actually moving, but it's so little bit I wouldn't ever be able to see it. This is magnifying it. It's called an ideomotor response, technically. Okay. Now, one day, we came back from Singapore, and a few months later, my wife says, I think I've lost my bracelet. Oh, I haven't seen it in months. And I said, okay, let's do the pendulum thing. And so what we do the process of elimination. And we say, is it at work? And we got no. Okay. Is it at home? And we got yes. Good. Is it in the garage? No. Is it on the first floor? Yes. Oh, okay. Is it in the kitchen? No. Is it in the laundry room? No. Is it in our bedroom? No. Is it in our closet? No. Is it in the bathroom? No. All the places you'd think of it. Is it in our daughter's room? Yes. Is it in a cabinet? No. Is it in the end table? No. Is it in the closet? Yes. Oh. Is it on a shelf? No. Jeez. Is it in some clothing? Yes. Ah. Is it packed away in a box? No. Is it hanging? Yes. Okay. And is it in a jacket? No. Is it in pants? Yes. So then she just went through all the pants, and there it was in the pocket where she had stuck it when she had packed her bags. Coming back from Singapore, she stuck it in somebody in our daughter's pocket. We found it that way. And so that can be a really useful way to find stuff that's in the subconscious mind. Yeah. What, you've been betwixt and between? You know what that means, betwixt and between? Akiko? Betwixt, that's like, you can't make up your mind. On one hand you want this, but on the other hand you want that. Do I want to marry, you know, Johnny or Danny, or Betty Lou or Sammy Sue, or whatever it is, you see? What do your heart really want? And so you can get at your subconscious desires with this. Should I go to college for law, or do I really want to be a doctor? You see? And so this means law, this means doctor, or whatever it is. And you can get at what you really want in this way, that kind of information. Okay. Homework tonight, get with someone, if you can. If you're all by yourself at the hotel, get with someone at the hotel, and practice swinging your balls. Try saying that with a straight face. Just a swing. Okay, 10-minute break. You deserve it.
Five stuff, water, stuff like that. It was really weird. It was
the hotel had extremely heavily chlorinated water. He took the chlorine out of the house. He took it out so much the day before. I didn't realize it because I was drinking a bottle of water, but I got kind of stuck working in like the booth and ran out of my bottle of water. Reluctantly ran to dinner with no water. Started swimming water because I was so thirsty. It was amazing. What happened between the coffee shop this afternoon, which you guys drink the water, stuff like that. He's actually done it halfway around the world. He's got people in France from his place in Virginia. And he actually selected it because they were dumping, they talked to the, they were sitting out by the pool, which was weird because it was cold out, but they had a heated pool. And the guy said, man, pool guys, I've been in the chlorine's all, I tested this water like four times, I've dumped like five times the amount of chlorine in the water. It still tests like there's no chlorine in it. And he laughed and goes, oh, sorry about that, it's straight in that chlorine.
Well, you know, you basically said that if you can read energy, you affect it.
Well, you affect it whether you read it or not. You just know what you're doing.
Yeah,
Oh, yeah.
Sorry. Are you all having fun? Y'all doesn't seem to work
too well. No. Oh, y'all's a great all-purpose word.
Well, unless you're from Kentucky or Texas, like, you don't understand. People are like, y'all. That's right, y'all.
But you do have to explain it as being y'all. Y'all and all y'all.
My partner teaches from Tennessee, yeah. So
she's an Asian. Her grammar has a little bit
less.
Cows are not.
Yeah, and he also says good when instead he should be saying very well. I'm a stickler on grammar.
I heard that on a Family Guy one time.
Yeah, I know.
Everybody's like, oh, stickler for the grammar.
I like the episode with the Ipa Cat.
The what?
Ipa Cat.
I haven't seen
that. Oh, you haven't?
No.
Oh, it's Peter and Brian, it's Stewie and Quagmire. Please, Quagmire. Are sitting on the couch. Yeah, are sitting on the couches. And, oh no, it's not Quagmire, it's the older brother. Ryan's a dog, Stewie's a baby.
Chris,
that's it. And there's the last piece of cake. And so the person who takes the Ipa Cat and pukes last.
Chris.
It's the cake.
I don't want the cake.
That is
the grossest
thing
ever.
Oh, my
God.
Who thought this was a good idea?
Well, maybe not. That's not very common.
Every time Stewie like puts on any sort of female attire, and
that's almost every episode now.
Almost every episode.
Yeah.
Wouldn't it be lovely if it turned out I was gay? Shaping up his football head. I think that's Brian was, it was, remember that time when I'm not good at babysitting. Remember that time, you know, and they always use flashbacks. And so Stewie's jumping on the bed, and he's got a regular shaped head. Yeah, he's jumping on the bed, and he hits the ceiling and comes down and goes, what? Oh my God, are you okay? Yeah, what's up? Yeah. Football shaped head.
Really?
You know, I've tried to get into anime,
that, what is it? Which I can't remember. There's this one where the half demon kid or whatever wears the red outfit.
Yogi?
Yes. But the plot lines are so nuts.
Well, it's like, I like watching cartoons for the enjoyment of watching the cartoons. I don't really care to think that much when I'm watching cartoons.
No comment.
And anime is definitely like, you know, about honor and loyalty.
Well, the second part of my lunch. I knew I wasn't going to be able to finish it all at lunch, so.
I guess it'll be Mexican food again tonight.
Mine was, I want to just watch the
series
and zone out for a while.
It's about a half a mile back. But about a mile back.
No, it's farther than that. I think it's 2 miles down.
Oh, wow.
It's kind of far to walk and get groceries and then walk back. I guess I've got stuff I can eat for supper. I've got
the first anime I ever watched.
Well.
I really like
some apples. Oh, that goes far.
I've got some protein bars.
Oh, really? No. See, I need some salt.
Yeah.
Oh, sure.
Sugar.
I don't. Yeah.
Really?
And,
I wouldn't go for
it. I like certain things, but I have to be in that mood to watch.
And I might break down and get one of those lean cuisine dinners.
Oh, yes.
They're pretty. I eat those at home. They're pretty good.
One episode, I think. You have to see the next episode to find out what's going on. You'll lose me. Because I like the one shot lunch, just like in X-Files.
Right. So did you like
one shot of like two episodes back? It was perfect for the white section.
Yeah.
But he got into like
what I wanted to ask him is if you didn't see each other for 10 years and you came back and he tugged on his tie, would you go down and walk me again, do you think? You want to, because I can see we're like from week to week that would probably be, but you know, I kind of wonder how long.
Here we go. They're off to the races. Nancy, are you still with us? Is she there?
No.
She probably fell asleep.
She didn't seem to have lost my phone.
Okay. Page 21, script, pendulum, suggestibility test. Just an example of what you would say. You can read it. Hands rising and falling, suggestibility test. There's a script on page 22 of how you could do that.
But you don't do any of these with clients, just in groups?
I highly recommend you don't, because if they fail, you screw up their confidence. I never do. If you work here, you never do. These are mainly for demonstrational purposes of groups. However, the old-time hypnotists will adamantly disagree with me on that. So I'll give you kind of both sides. If you notice at the front of the manual, it says, National Guild of Hypnotists Approved Textbook. That's why when you graduate our course, you're certified by the National Guild. Because they've gone through this textbook and said, this contains enough of our core material to where we will certify the people who go through this course. except the president of the NGH had one bone of contention. That was, Cal, you're absolutely wrong about not doing suggestibility tests. And I said, Doc, this is a place where we're going to have to agree to disagree. And that's where you just shut up and you listen. And so he agreed to disagree with me on that. He says, you have to do them. I say, we've done thousands of sessions without it, so you don't have to. And he says, well, and I went, well, we had a little bit of a back and forth. And it became evident that he wasn't going to budge and I wasn't going to budge. But I said, do I still get approval? He says, yes. So it wasn't a big enough of a problem with them to reject the textbook. But just let you know, that the old-time hypnotists, they're adamant about doing what they've been doing, and that's how we tend to be as people anyway.
Okay, so the exercises that we did standing up, would that be like a suggestibility test?
Yes, we did hands rising and falling.
Yeah.
We did hand clasp.
Okay.
Yeah. So if you read the book, you'll recognize that they're very similar to what I did.
So if someone did ask that, would they say we're not going to hypnotize you because it doesn't look as if it's going to be effective?
That's what they would do. Or they would try to sidestep around and go, oh, that's not an important test anyway. I didn't mean to give you that. It doesn't mean much. And try to backpedal. And I'm thinking, you know, you kind of already dug yourself in a hole. I mean, you just don't need them. And I remember Dr. Damien said, well, I'll do the test with them with their eyes closed so they don't know. I said, Doc, they know if their hands came apart. Oh, not if you do it right. So, you know, that's the way people are. We get, you know, I'm stuck in my ways about things and they're stuck in their ways about things. And, you know, it's just the way it is. So hand clasp was this one. I did it in an authoritative manner as opposed to the more maternal or non-directive way. Page 24. Classic approach to hypnotic inductions. Before I go there, all of you guys, in your books, do you have one of these? Yours is blue. Okay, yours should be blue. I was wondering why mine was gold, because they're supposed to be blue. Actually, our CFIs, when they teach the course, theirs are gold, and mine is blue. That's how they keep track of the CFIs and the CIs and stuff like that. Anyway, will you please, when you come tomorrow, have that filled out? And just have it filled out the best you can. If you have a question about something, we'll take care of it first thing in the morning. Now, at the bottom is a signature block for me. Do not sign this. I sign this. Yours is two pages now. Yours is...
Yeah. It says NGH certification program on it.
Okay, they just suddenly must have updated it. Now we got to update ours.